will come on and control the unit, that has now been re-establishing. There is this issue of interference with commanders on the ground. When commanders, if they colonel, if they warrant officers on the ground managing a crowd, or captains managing a crowd, it's their expertise and their, to make a decision because they've got control of the management. My own research is in that some of the senior ranks sitting at provincial office instruct these individuals what to do, and it sometimes causes the problem. And then the role of councillors and executive mayors refusing to accept petitions of crowds, and when they refuse to accept these petitions, sometimes the crowds become violent. So it's something that we need to address. There is also the power judgment of an African Union, a transport, an Arab Workers Union judgment that was handed down that makes organizers responsible for payoffs or damages legally. This is a constitutional court judgment, and so it can be applied to any demonstration where there's damage to the property. People can sue the union or any or organizer or march convener. See, there's a concern that the role of the police can become politicized. I've put that there. If we keep on thinking the police to deal with matters that councillors, for instance, could be dealing with, then the police become a target in the process. It's something that the committee must just take note of. And then the use of ops members to do crime prevention and protection duties. If these are dedicated resources for cops members to deal with crowds, that's what they should be doing. They shouldn't be pushed into other duties that will take them away from their core business. And then there's a last equipment. Do we have sufficient equipment for the SAPS, POPS members in particular? The vehicles break down regularly, and there needs to be proper maintenance on those particular vehicles yet. If you look at that graph, you'll see our violent protest is growing. From 2008, I didn't get to the figures there, but this is a UWC graph here. And you will see that we have to bring our resources up to speed to be able to police the type of demonstrations. There's now been an intervention in conclusion by the NASCOM and to grow and capacitate it, to re-establish the national coordinating structure for COPS, and to look at the effectiveness of coordination, which is traveling to the scenes of protest. The question that also must be looked at today is how the local station supporting what COPS is doing, and the role of the Metro Police in terms of giving that necessary support and how they work together. And then the training and resourcing of the regional or the provincial units, we ought to be addressing change. And then the approach and implementation of the ministerial guidelines, how is that policy being implemented? I think that's it for my session. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I've been touched on a number of issues that will be very briefly in the session. As you already alluded to, I think it is a public knowledge that of late the country has been laying host to a number of service delivery and labor projects. Quite often than not, a growing number of these projects are accompanied by various provocations, intimidation, public violence, and to some extent, elements of criminality. In fact, these protests have come to be a prominent feature of the country's public discourse. A state of citizen protests in many communities around the country, I think we all know that they have stretched the capacity of them to police them. Control and management of public protests in South Africa, as we all know, it has been a task that has been repeatedly given to us. And within that, the task of crowd control and management has always been a preserve of specialized units. And over the years, these specialized units have been subject of a number of transformation processes. And as I've been alluded to earlier on, the history of COPS or what is known as public order policy unit, has been really characterized by discontinuities and continuities. And it has been made really by controversies associated with perceived indiscriminate and disproportionate use of force, arbitrary riot control practices, and what is perceived as erosion of civil liberties. These perceptions really have not disappeared over the years. Instead, they keep on resurfacing. And in recent years, centered amongst these were an array of discomforting issues raised about POPs, which is seen by many observers as a brute enforcer of state power. And I think questions have been raised about the methods used in policing violent protests in the country. The methods used in these public protests attract great controversy, given numerous allegations of bias and brutality and perceived incompatibilities with civil liberties. And to this end, it's suffice to say that, as acknowledged by the police secretariat, the main challenge of the state is to respond to these manifestations within the spirit and context of human rights, oriented democratic policing and the Bill of Rights. There is really an increasing realization that in carrying out this legislative role of facilitating people protest, the staff really needs to strike a good balance between respecting the rights of citizens to demonstrate versus the police needs to ensure peace and stability. And I do believe that robust debates are needed on how to turn the tide against public violence protests around the country, and on how to bring about desirable public order policy that is predicated on ethos of democratic policy. It is really my belief that COVID should be at the forefront of those debates, and the questions that should really inform such debates and frame the discussions are, firstly, are the public order policy reflective of an old wine in new bottles? What implications is the metamorphosis of internal stability units and area crime command units of the past into public order policing heralded in the practice of policing public order in the country? In what way do historical legacies and memories impact on attempts at police reform? What mechanisms will be the most effective in bringing about meaningful and sustainable police organizational change in South Africa? How can a lasting policing culture change be brought about so as to erase the perceptions, real or imagined, of police brutality in South Africa? And lastly, can the promise of demilitarizing, improving the police car control skills and tools of faith, and reducing police car violence, as made by the new minister, Nadine Clerk, or his ministers, be realized? So Ivan has really alluded to the legislative mandate, but I won't go there into detail. I'll just quickly go to the performance of the in terms of public order policy. First, I will just start by sort of providing a summary of the current structure of the POPs and the staff complement of the unit. Currently, there are 27 existing provincial POP units. There is one existing POP reserve unit, and the actual total staff complement of the unit is 4,721. As far as tools of trade are concerned, the POPs are provided with the following. There have been 200 Nyalas nationally. Seven armored fleets to be boarded. POPs have a total of 7 ready to be boarded. In terms of water cannons, there are 10 water cannons. There are 973 soft top vehicles. And then in terms of ammunition and firearms, they are having 9mm. And they are having R5 rifles and others. And in order to enhance the capacity of the units, a turnaround expansion strategy was developed. The strategy entails the following: establishing of additional capacity, of re-establishing of previously existing POP units that were disbanded, establishing of new POP units, and enhancing operational support capacity. And then in terms of the 2012-2013 annual report, delivery issues raised relating to public order policing were reported as follows. From 1 April 2011 to 31 March 2012, the staff police total of 1,174 unrest related incidents and 10,744 peaceful related incidents in relation to the price of the food. This amendment will attain into some respectful target, the target of the SPR for the parents. From 1/12/2012 to 31 March 2013, the first received a total number of 1,182 unrest-related and 10,517 peaceful-related incidents in relation to requests received, and also this amounted to an achievement of 100% target. The report from the IPID reveals the following in terms of the cases related to the work of crime. A total number of 431 or 7% deaths as a result of police activity were reported. A total of 50 fatalities were reported during the 2012 year, and a total of 4,131 assault cases were received during 2012-2013. A key area that needs special attention as far as cost are concerned are economic strategies, training, cultural and organizational transformation, demilitarization, power management, command and control. And let's go straight to the question that should really not escape scrutiny today. I think these are the questions that the community could look at. Thirdly, I think the community could ask the Fed whether the turnaround strategy that the public order policy is talking about, whether it has been costed, and whether such costs have been communicated to the National Treasury, and whether such should be, the committee should really request the Fed to share the budgetary implications. The committee could also request Fed to explain the asymmetry or the uneven distribution of opportunities personnel across the country. Questions arise whether really what informs such allocation, personnel allocation. Was it because of the population size, intelligence driven identification of project hotspots, or is it due to the allocation? I also believe that the community could research the department state how many out of the 1,100 people protest and 1,907 protests were video recorded as per the police guidelines and regulation, and how many arrests and successful prosecution were affected from those unrest using video footage. The committee will also request the steps to indicate the number of emails employed in the pop unit as per the policy guidelines as far as women empowerment is concerned. The committee will also ask the department to explain the traditional allocation or breakdown of armored vehicles. It should also request such to indicate whether the 10 water cannons that are available at the moment are really adequate for the whole country, more especially in light of the increasing violent protests. The police should really find out whether there are professional photographers within each provincial territory so as to cater those, you know, like public protests for purposes of investigation and further prosecution. The committee should really request research to indicate whether photographs or video taking is part of the generic training of the unit. We should also ask the department to state the allocated budget of procurement of new and additional equipment, especially in light of the reestablishment and upgrading of the port. The committee should also ask the department to explain in detail the modern approach to the establishment of POP units, because in their presentation they are talking about models, and that really is not clear. It creates a lot of confusion. So I do believe that the community should really request them to explain that clearly. The committee should also request clarity on the current state of the following: dedicated information gatherers, letter officers, and investigation officers in pop units across the country. Does this capacity exist of now? Because they indicated in their turnaround strategy that vacancies, there will be vacancies concerning those posts. The department reported that 1,110 committees, POP members, completed crowd management refresher training, and 2,275 are still to receive the refresher training. The question then that the committee should find out is when the refresher training is going to be organized for the remaining 2,275. According to the department, 56 video camera operators both were advertised during May 2014. I believe that the committee should really find out whether the processes are completed in terms of filling those at the CAS post, and how many positions have been filled so far. According to the department, the total cost requirement for capacity strategy over 4 years is 3.3 billion. I do believe that the committee should find out whether this has been communicated to the National Treasury. The department also reported that purpose-built POP vehicles are in design phase. I know that they've indicated that they've been in talks with the CIR Center for Scientific Electoral Research here to design these vehicles for police. So I think the question will be then, who really are the service providers? And the government reported that it is going to create accommodation for new units to get there. A question then is why this has not been planned for and costed. Who is going to build the accommodation? Is it safe or is it public works? And I recall that in the fourth parliament, the committee raised a number of concerns regarding self-building projects. The panel also indicated that there will be training for additional capacity. The committee should find out who are the training service providers. And I think the members can go through those, you know, like questions why during the presentation by the department. The right to peaceful assembly forms the cornerstone of our democracy, based on the principles of collective oppression and mutual form, general care. To this end, public order policy needs to reflect the efforts of human rights-based democratic policy. Therefore, this really necessitates the realignment of priorities. The first should really prioritize the use of upgrading both the training and the equipment in the field of public order policy, in line with the national development plan. On the other hand, while the police have the responsibility to police gatherings within the framework of the law, the Gathering Act confers considerable responsibility on conveyors, organizers of events, to ensure that such events are carried out in an orderly and peaceful manner. This then goes without saying that public awareness campaigns are needed to educate citizens and trusted conveners about their rights and responsibilities. It is also important for policymakers and the police management that there are a number of enacting socio-economic figures that give rise to public understanding disorder. The steps need to work closely with relevant stakeholders to address the root causes of public protest that can violence and not merely address the symptoms. Thanks a lot, sir. Thank you.
Right, honourable members, right, honourable members, welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Police and in the National Assembly. Welcome to this hearing. Welcome to members as well. Maybe just to indicate the program for the day, and then we'll give the opportunity to members to introduce themselves and also to the delegation of SAPS. We will first have a briefing on public order policing. Then we will also have a briefing on the firearms registry. Members will remember we had a briefing 3 weeks ago and we requested an action plan. We will give the SAPS an opportunity to provide that action plan. And then 5 minutes later, at 1 o'clock, we will have the inspector judge of the DPCI give us a briefing. If there's a time problem, we will postpone that to the 17th of September, but we'll see how things go. I'm going to first ask the members to introduce themselves, and we will ask the National Commissioner to introduce the delegation. I will then say a few remarks, and then we'll immediately go to the briefing, and then give members an opportunity. I think let's start with Honourable Abatsi, and you may be...
My name, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Angie Muliwati. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Cindy Lemola. I'm a member of this Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Morning. I'm Delma Joseph. I'm an author and member of this committee.
Good morning. Rakele Mbele, committee member.
And morning, Alda and Kyle Labard, also committee member.
Morning, I'm Mabija Lebohane, a committee member.
Morning, my name is Jerome Marke, committee member.
Thank you very much. We'll then ask the National Commissioner to introduce the delegation.
Chairperson, thank you very much and a very good morning. I have with me a delegation made up of two environments, one from our firearm registry environment, as well as the team that will be representing the public order policing. With me, I'm with, to be recognized, I'm having Deputy National Commissioner for Corporate Services, Lieutenant General Begin. We also have the Divisional Commissioner for Public Order Policing and Operational Response Services, Lieutenant General Mawela. Okay. And then we also have with him Major General Anand Jain, also from the Operational Response Services. We have Major General Luke, who is the Acting Divisional Commissioner now for Visible Policing, that's responsible for FRS. Okay. The Major, then we have the Major General Sanchez, who is the head of the Rapid Rail Police. We have Major General Mishala, head of Police Emergency Services, Invisible Policy. We have Major General P.T. Jacob, who is the head of Legal Services that supports the operations in Brazil. Major General Menziwa, who is the head of Strategic Management. Brigadier Inakini, who is the acting head for Central Firearms Registry. Then we have Brigadier Maratella, who is the head of our Secretariat and Government Liaison Environment. General Sikidi, who is from Strategic Management. General Sohan, from Visible Policing. Lieutenant Kipanera, MIT Office Central Firearms Registry. And Lieutenant General Spain, who handles our parliamentary liaison issues. Chairperson, my thank you.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner, for the introduction. Yes, maybe just to give a background to this activity of the Portfolio Committee. Members will remember that we had the annual budget hearings. One of the issues that was mentioned or interrogated was the question of public order policing. Incidentally, the new minister also indicated that the strengthening of public order policing to ensure that human rights are protected at all times during the policing committee process is one of its priorities. The Portfolio Committee on Police also resolved in one of its recommendations that the SAP should prioritize the strengthening of public order policing units as soon as possible and fully integrate some intelligence capabilities in the activities. I think we also said that we will monitor the strengthening of this process on a quarterly basis. And we will also, in terms of the DRRR process that's going to happen in October, also use today's hearing as guideline. We feel very strongly that we must, if necessary, support and strengthen that capacity. And that also is in line with the vision in the National Development Plan, namely a police force that is trusted by the community. Quite importantly today is also that we interrogate those issues public order position is not the vice card of the onions of Africa, it's all around, even in medicine in the U.S. Even the president of the U.S. has asked questions about public order position. So it's not only limited to South Africa, it's a worldwide phenomenon, and how we deal with it effectively, that's the big question. It is a specialized area of policing, and therefore we will also focus on those areas today. Thank you for the presentation. I must compliment SAPS. You know, the portfolio committee is very critical compass, but we received the presentation well done 2 weeks ago. And it really deals with the core issues. It also deals with the pros and the cons. It's not a one-picture document. So I think this may be a good example also of other institutions that are before this committee, and also other units of SAPS. You know, we like this approach. You know, it's a professional presentation, and I think that's good set. Ready for the interaction this morning. Without further ado, we will ask now the National Commission and our team to lead the briefing, and then we will take questions from members. Over to you, National Commission.
Chairperson, thank you very much. As I introduce this presentation, which shall be led by General Mawela, the Divisional Commissioner for this environment, let me just make a few opening remarks. The first issue I'd like to recognize, and maybe thank you for, Chairperson, is the prioritization of the matter, public order policing by the committee, and as part of your oversight, prioritizing your engagement, so that we can also be able to apprise the committee of some of the challenges and the needs that we're having, where we may need support on an environment such as this one. I go on to say we know that public order policing is a constitutional remit. It is one of the remits that are articulated clearly in Section 253 of the Constitution as one of the responsibilities we have as a police service. I recognize also at this point in time the fact that we have been on a journey of different shapes and versions since 1995 with our public order policy. And I'm sure when General Mawela presents, you would see that in 1995 we had quite a voluminous number of units. I guess probably because of where we found ourselves being in our newfound democracy, we thought that the type of activity or an engagement as police that we would have less and less. The focus then became more reduction of those units, because by 2000, whereas we had 42 units in 1995 with about 11,000 members, from 2002 the units were increased by 143, but the numbers were drastically cut in terms of members. It was down by almost a third or a quarter to 7,000 or so. By 2006 the cut was in steep, because we went almost half of the unit and we were down to about 2.5 members. So, and you'd also hear when he presents that in the focus in terms of trust of what the unit was doing, that also changed from time to time. But we soon realized that public order policy, like what you've mentioned, Chairperson, all over the world, shall remain a very crucial activity for any police service. And this is why now we are on an acceleration journey to ensure that we capacitate our public order policing. The presentation that we shall be making is giving details on how we are now entering that journey of recapacitating our public order policing unit. You would also have noted that we refer to the SONA of 2013, where the President articulated A, the need to accelerate and capacitate, but also he accentuated in a way the need for integrated public order policing offering, and not just integration within us and the police, but across the JPPS system. So the presentation shall also somehow detail what we are doing to work with our counterparts, you know, our fellow justice cluster members to assist us. You would know that with the Department of Justice, for instance, we're talking about dedicated courts we work with the NPA to ensure that if there is any for the caterers work to be done, there is space and accommodation for the type of work. We work with correctional services so that they can be able to dedicate space so that they could be speediness in dealing with public order policing matters. So we are also in this regard guided by the national security strategy, because somehow it details some of the threats that we should be alive to and that our planning should accommodate as we go forward. Without further ado, let me request General Marilla to walk us through the presentation, and then Chairperson Vishal, then get out you with the questions that you still have that you have to answer. Thank you, Chair. General Marilla.
Thank you very much, Mr. Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members. The purpose of my presentation is to brief the committee on the state of public order policing, the plan to enhance public order policing within the South African Police Service in order to mitigate the current and future situation in respect of crowd management and violent persecution in the Republic of South Africa. The factors giving rise to the enhancing of the public order policing within the SAPS. One, the Republic is currently experiencing an upsurge in violent incidents, which requiring urgent additional intervention from SAPS. It is anticipated that the upsurge against the state authority will not decline in the foreseeable future due to the current climate of service delivery and relevant protections. This has been reinforced by the NICOC stability assessment. Although SAPS force actions have been largely successful in containing these incidents, and the use of force has been limited, the situation requires a renewed focus. Section 17 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa makes provision for the right to assemble, demonstrate, picket, and present the petition peacefully and unarmed. While Section 8 and Section 4 of the Regulation of Government Act, Section 205 of 1993, places the obligation on the convener and marshals to take all reasonable steps to ensure that participants are unarmed. Section 205, subsection 3 of the South African Constitution, number 108 of 1996, further defines the main functions of the South African Police Service as, among the others, to maintain public order. During the 2018 State of Nation Address, the President instructed the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster, the JCPS, to put measures in place at national, provincial and local level to ensure that any incidents of violent protest are acted upon and investigated for the future. This measure includes enhanced cooperation between the South African Police Service, National Prosecuting Authority and Department of Justice in terms of prosecution, the review of all the dockets pertaining to public violence, the imposition of prosecution in all cases where a prima facie case is proved. The National Joint Operational and Intelligence Structure, which is the operational arm of the JCPS, also established a stability priority committee to manage immediate security threats to stabilize focus, to stability, focus on NICOC priorities such as the instability in the labor, in the mining sector, political intolerance, service delivery protests, anti-foreign sentiments, transport sector, whereby safety, in the electric sector there is some violent activities there, education sector, and the measures have also issued several instructions to all the role players, including the municipalities to co-opter, to ensure that they address service delivery underlying factors as we identify them. The next slide, Chairperson and Honorable Members, it depicts the road which we have traveled in terms of the number of incidents we have handled since 2008 until 2014. What is significant in this slide is the increase of the violent unrest, as depicted with the red color. I will focus on 2011, 2012 to 2013, 2014, whereby the violent protest action escalated from 1,226, 2012, and then in 2012-2013 financial year, it escalated to 1,882. The last financial year is escalated to 1,907. Chairman and honourable members, if we can go to the route which we have traveled, the National Commissioner has briefly touched on this slide, that in 1995, when the new South African Police Service was established, we have inherited 42 corps units comprising of 11,000 members. These are the corps which were there previously since the amalgamation. And their core function, the primary function was drug management, secondary, it was crime prevention. But due to the transformation which was happening and the changes which were happening in the police service, from 2002 to 2003, these units have changed to crime combating units. And they've moved from 42 units to 23 units. And from 43 units to 23 crime combating units. And also moved from 7,000 plus members to 2,595 members. What is important about this movement is that also the mandate changed from primary function being crime prevention and the secondary function being health management. And it also impacted in the 10 sectors within the ACPS, whereby even training changed. We started to provide them with crime prevention training, even the resources. We're no longer concentrating on providing them with resources which are related to crime management, because now their primary function was crime prevention. Then in 2011, that's when the minister approved the new policy that we need to re-establish the public order police units in the South African Police Service. Then when we started, with 31 corps units comprising of 4,197 members and encouraging all those dysfunctional equipment members who their training was not focused on health management. The next slide, honorable gentlemen and honorable members, it shows the geographical placement of all the current corps units as it is today. Currently, we are having one national reserve corp unit, which is situated in Pretoria, and 27 public order policing units, which are situated in all the provinces. The next slide, Chairperson, honorable members, it shows the resources which we are currently having. We have a total of 561 armored vehicles, which are using by these members. And the average age of this armored vehicle ranges between 20 to 27 years. It shows that these armored vehicles are quite old. And then some of them, they were refurbished in 2010. Actually, in 2009, in preparation of 2010 events, which we have in the country. And out of these 531 armored vehicle, 7 have already been boarded and 192 are ready for boarding processes. So it means that currently what we can use is 462. The water cannons, we are having 10. The soft top vehicles is 973. The video cameras, the old ones, the smaller ones which the members were using, 63, with 23 digital cameras. And when the minister pronounced the re-establishment of the box unit, we procured 12 bigger cameras, which can give us the better footage of what is happening is 12. And the list of armed ammunition which are currently using, individual members are issued with a 9mm side arm, and then those who are doing crowd management, they are also issued with a shotgun, whereby they are using a blue double ball, ammunition, and another one is this white reduced rounds. Honorable members and the chairperson, maybe you have also observed when we have handled this kind of incidents, members of the public will forever pick up the cartridge and show that this is what the police have used. And mostly, you will observe that it is a blue kind of a cartridge, another one is this white one, and the white one is the one shooting that is reduced round. We also issued them with the 40mm launcher. We also issued them with the R5 rifle and the R1 rifle. The R1 rifle, they utilize it to launch the CSMOC. Upon instruction that we need to enhance our public order units within the SAFs, the National Commissioner gave the instruction to the organizational development to start working on the investigation. And this is the criteria which they've used to determine the crowd management units in the country. They consider the number of unrest incidents which occurred in the particular area, the peaceful ones, the populations, the service area, the mines, the farms, the national key points, and the rural area. So they break out the criteria whereby they came out with 6 models. And these models, it will range from 1 to 6 with the number of members of each and every unit to be established, meaning that the model 1 will comprise of 140 members, and the model 6, the biggest one, will have 481. When we continue, currently in the country we have 27 provincial public order units and 1 POP reserve unit, which is situated in Pretoria. These 27, as depicted in the map which we have presented, they are across the provinces in the country. And the implementation process, if everything goes well and everything is equal, at the end of the day we have 50 provincial POPs units and 4 POP reserve units. The enhancing of existing POP units through the provision of additional capacity, the re-establishment of previously POP units which were dormant or closed, and various restructuring processes, and the establishment of the new POP units which will be distributed equally in terms of human and physical resources. And on average, if everything goes well according to our plan, it means that each POP unit will serve 4 clusters and approximately 22 police stations. And this it will assist us in terms of the reaction time and to be closer and understand the community which we are facing. If we can continue, Chairman, honorable members, this slide, it depicts the number of existing provincial POPs units. It also shows the number of the POPs reserve units which we intend to establish, and with the purple color or the red color, I'm not sure, colorblind, pink, the number of new POPs units which we are going to establish. And the yellow one, it will reflect the previously existing POPs units. So starting from the model 6, Jefferson, it shows that the existing POPs units which we have, which are at model 6, it is in Cape Town and Durban, and Pretoria we are going to establish a model 6. So it goes, Jefferson, I'm not sure if the slide is here, how we have distributed these POPs units from model 1 to model 6. The roll-up strategy which we have developed, Jefferson and honorable members, in order to enhance the public order policing within the service, a phased-in approach is considered for the expansion of POP, and a rollout strategy will include 1, establishing of additional capacity of POP units, 2, re-establishing of previous existing POP units, 3, establishing of new POP units, 4, enhancing operational support capacity for this unit. And the following general rules which is being used by our organizational development, it will be applied, whereby the rollout up to 80% of an ideal staff established for the headquarters POP units, and then the 80% of ideal staff for the Model 6 units, 70 and 80% of ideal staff established for all existing ports, and the rollout of 50% of ideal staff established for all new units. And the rollout strategy is set up over the 2 MTF cycle over 4 years. The identifying of suitable accommodation, operational resources required, and training needs will run concurrently with the implementation phases. And the rollout strategy is dependent, of course, on the allocation of additional funds by Treasury. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, if everything goes well according to our plan, the geographical placement of all the existing POPs units and the established one, and recapacitation of or the re-establishment of those which were dormant, the map will look as it is. with 54 box units. The next slide, Chairperson, honorable members, we are depicting the geographical placement of box units per province. This shows that Western Cape, where we have the existing one, and where are we going to place the proposed mobile one, where will the new additional box unit will be situated, and we also show that the national key point where it is situated. So all the following slides, Chairperson, choose a province, exactly what I said. It will be followed by the Eastern Cape, the geographical placement, and followed by KZN, followed by Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest, Free State, Northern Cape, next slide, honorable Chairperson and honorable members. If everything goes well according to our plan, this is how we want to roll out the capacitation of this public order police members a year in the 4 years program. The first column, Chairperson, if we are that we have fully established the 54 units and fully capacitated at 100%, in the country we'll be sitting with 12,779 public order police members. But currently, actual personnel, we are sitting at 4,721. Because of, we know that as times it becomes impossible for us to have 100% of what we have. So we are waiting on a planning figure that actually, if we say we are operating at 80%, we'll be having 8,759 members. So therefore, for us to be operating at this planning figure, we will require additional 4,038 additional members. And how are we going to recruit them? In the first year, once we are given additional budget, the first year we will recruit 999, second year 927, the third year we'll recruit 1,025, the fourth year we'll recruit 1,087, we have 4,389. The next slide, Chairperson and honorable members. We also felt that it is important for these force members to be supported by the dedicated investigating officers. And this dedicated investigating capacity will be allocated each of the force units which will investigate all the case dockets that emanate from unrest-related or protest actions, incidents, and all other cases that emanate from the national operations such as the major events and elections. We also felt it necessary that we need to have information officers. The provision of forewarning intelligence is of critical importance. Therefore, dedicated information gatherers are required for planned as well as unplanned protest action. Legal officials, the Regulation of Gathering Act shifted the focus away from obtaining permission to hold a gathering, but to giving notice of an intended gathering. The SAPS must devise effective methods to promote public safety. So, to ensure this, SAPS play a proactive role in attempting to identify and diffuse any possible conflict before it escalates to violence. Therefore, the involvement of SAPS legal officials during the second form meeting of the gathering, of the regulations of the Gathering Act, is so important to eliminate any legal discrepancies which may occur. So these legal officers, they will sit in a section four meeting, the Golden Triangle meeting, to ensure that they advise our police accordingly. So to support the public order police, this is the number of people whom we think that it needs to be added. Total, it will be 1,444, comprising of 387 investigating officers, 1,005 information gatherers, and 52 legal officers. And also, these members will be recruited in the four-year program. The next slide, honorable Chairperson and honorable members, this slide depicts that if everything goes well and everything is equal, At the end of the day, you have 1,440,223 members who will be servicing this environment, comprising of the operational POP members, investigation officers, information gatherers, and the legal officers. And this, obviously, it will happen in the 4-year program. If we get money with year one, we intend to ensure that the focus will be on the enhancing of the POP at the SQ level, the establishment of the POP reserve units for Cape Town, Durban, and Mbombela. Number three, we'll ensure that we do the re-establishment of the POP units in Pretoria, because of we have changed that the existing POP unit needed a national reserve group. And then we'll therefore establish of a new POP unit for Brest and Dubasi, and the enhancing of the existing POP unit at ADU, Rustenburg, Port Elizabeth, and Ulundi. Lastly, with year one, we'll ensure the establishment of the operational support capacity. It is envisaged that the trained members from the provincial POP units will be utilized for initial establishment of respective POP units, POP reserve units. These members will be replaced with the newly trained members during the rollout strategy. So that if we have 50-50, we have newly recruited members and those who are existing in the post environment so that they can transfer the skills and the knowledge to the newly recruited one, or the newly recruited one work under the guidance of those who are there for some time. This slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, it talks to the immediate action, the interventions which we have already put in place. And the intervention is based on two levels, the human resource and the physical resources. And this is linked to the budgetary implication and funding model over the short, medium, and long term. The intervention provided an immediate capacity in the run-up to the 2014 general election and beyond. So this immediate action was started prior to the elections, which we have delivered successfully. We focus on stabilizing the hotspots and providing a platform for the exercising of democratic rights to vote by citizens. The human resource, training of additional capacity to deal with crowd management, which results in quick response capabilities and force multipliers prior to general elections, which we successfully delivered. The public order policing unit, we have ensured that 1,826 of the members completed their newly developed POP crowd management course and the refresher training. So 2,225 members still have to undergo the refresher training of this new curriculum which we have developed. We have also engaged the Metropolis, whereby we have trained 980 officers from Metropolis services from around the country, and then to ensure that they are ready to deal with eventualities within the metros. We have also subjected 12 Metropolis instructors on the train-the-trainer course for this metro. These train-the-trainer officers will ensure that they keep on providing in-service training to the metros, refresher courses, and to keep these members fit. We have also subjected 1,105 TRC members on the full-blown crowd management course, and 33 TRC members were also subjected to the crowd management platoon commanders training. The physical resources, Chairperson, Honourable Members, we have allocated 15 million rand, which is the money allocated to ensure that we keep our Nyala, the Armored Vehicle, operational, of which we have divided 15 million per unit of each and every Nyala. It means that 25,000 units is allocated for each and every Nyala to ensure that it's being maintained and repaired. And if everything goes well, it means that we will have, at any given time, 200 Nyalas which are operational. We have also tasked the supply chain management to ensure that the maintenance contract is established with service providers for each province to ensure the quick turnaround time for repairs and refurbishment of these Nyalas. We have also ensured that all armored vehicles which are utilized for crack management, they are now centralized as from February 2014. Recently, Chairperson and Honorable Members, it's quite expensive to maintain these armored vehicles. And it puts the provincial commissioners in a difficult position to make a decision whether to pay this 1 year at 75,000 to replace one tire or to pay this maybe 10 or 50 vans to provide this to the community. Therefore, the regional commissioner decided that we centralize it at national level and money be available so that at this level we ensure that this NLF are maintained and repaired. Continuing to the pyrotechnics, that is the tear gas tank drainage, we have allocated 20 million. This money was used to procure sufficient non-lethal means of dispersing the violent crime, that is the red and blue dye to be used for the water counts. We have also procured the CS gas, we have procured the sun drainage, the anti-riot drainage with this 20 million. We have used 770 to procure the video cameras, the modern ones, and we have also ensured that training is provided on those members whom we have allocated these video cameras. 56 video cameras operators who were advertised to remain. We are trying to attract the video camera operator people who will know and understand that the footage which you require may also be used in the court of law. So people who are professional in dealing with those issues. And 12 video cameras, 14 LCD projectors, and 8 external hard drives were also procured and distributed to box units during February and March 2014. 12 video cameras, 9 LCD projectors, 1 external, or this one is repeating itself. Continue to the next slide, Chairperson, Honorable Members. We have also made available 6 million to procure the night sight, binoculars, recording device, 65 portable recording devices for our members. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, maybe you have also observed that these days, at times, this process action, it starts as early as 6 o'clock in the morning. 8 hours of the morning, it starts, people, they go and base, they block the streets and so forth. So we must have the equipment which can assist us, we can operate during those times of the day or night. We have also made available 1.9 million to procure the long-range acoustic device. This is a non-lethal intervention. At times, we can use this device to communicate with the people. We can even write some of the conversation in different languages, communicate with the people. Again, it can make a noise which is very much disruptive. It can put some person at uncomfortable position when we use this device. So currently we are procuring 11 of the portable ones and one the big one which should be fixed in one of the vehicles. Media to long-term intervention, a total cost requirement for recapitation strategy to up to 70% over the 4-year period, we will require this big amount, 3.3 billion. And the money will be used to refurbish the current armored fleet, ensure that 200 Nyalas. And we have also want money to build what we call the purpose-built POP vehicle. And the design phase is currently underway. Once we get funding for this one, then CSIR will continue to design this new model vehicle for us. Accommodation for the new units which must be established is in the plan phase. We've developed the normal standards for those accommodation for each and every unit. Again, to support the boss, we feel that a national joint operational center we need to get a new facility which it will be used to monitor what is happening in the country. Currently, we are using the South African National Defense Force facility. On the borrowed business. We have the Sabazimbi Training Academy, which we are utilizing for our technical training. We also feel that we need new money to ensure that we refurbish it, we put it in a way that it will address the new developments and the democracy of South Africa. For example, since the change, previously we never had people who are gathering on top of the OP for several days and so forth. So our members need to be trained in an environment which depicts the reality on the ground. So we want to ensure that in this academy, we have different townships, suburbs, informal settlements, the terrain which depicts plus minus the same of what South Africa it is, so that when we train our members, we train them in the real situation. Accommodation profile, Chairperson, honorable members, as the unit standards developed by supply chain management according to DPW principles, varies per unit size, modern 1 to modern 6. For new units, 26 to be established, and the normal standard is already being developed, and according to the people who understand this supply chain, matters and accommodation and the lease process, they advise us that we require 3 million per annum for a lease for one accommodation. And physical resources required for the new units were identified and includes, but not limited to, vehicles, weapons, ammunition, water cannon, personal equipment, and IT equipment. In the long run, Chairperson and honorable members, we want to see each and every unit having its own water cannon. Currently, we have 10. And this, we have costed it around 1 billion. The human resource, the capacity for the new units, the 26 ones, and enhancing the existing ones to that number of 4,801, meaning that we'll be capacitating them at 70%. We are costing it to 2.3 billion. Medium to long-term intervention, children, honorable members, the personal strength expansion. The current strength we are standing at 4,721, and if everything is well, it is equal in the 4 year. In the 4 year plan, we will have to get 4,801 posts to be funded. There's no money for the department. And the total strength of enhancing the POP by year 4, it will stand at 9,522, meaning that that's 72%. And medium to long term, as we continue, the water cannon, Chairperson, I've already mentioned that we're having 10 currently, and all what we wish for is that each and every unit must have its own. But the agent needs, for now, we will want to get 9 water cannon, so that it is each and every province may have at least 2 water cannons. In conclusion, Chairperson, honorable members, we have observed that the defiance of the state authority through the attacks among the others of the police stations and other community-oriented institutions such as libraries, clinics, cannot be tolerated, and the rule of law must prevail. The stability of the Republic is essential, and especially in the run-up to the local government elections coming 2016, hence it is important to have an efficient, professional, and effective public order policy. The short-term implications will be funded from the current baseline allocation, while the medium to long-term cost implications require the new money and personnel above the baseline allocation. Initial costing for the entire recapitulation is currently standing at 3.3 billion. It is recommended, honorable chairperson and honorable members, that the strategic direction with financial implications be noted and be preferably supported by the committee. Thank you very much, chairperson. General?
Chairperson, to amplify the resource requirement, we could not wait for addition to the baseline because we needed to start doing certain things. We have reorganized our baseline for the current issues that have been mentioned by General Mawela to the tune of about 45 million. That's what we've done. But as you can see, the growth, the expansion requires new, fresh resources. We are submitting our request to Treasury with our union TSS to ensure that we can start looking at a graduated phase rollout plan and a graduated allocation of resources, and we hope that our request shall receive the necessary support, as this is a very crucial service that we require to ensure that stability is managed actively through public order policing and economic, social, educational, political, and other forms of the stability of this country can then be assured. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We'll take questions. I see hands. I recognize the members. Maybe two questions from my side. Firstly, for the National Commission. The current baseline for visible policing is 37 billion. And in terms of your current baseline for special interventions, it's 2.7. Now, are you saying this is additional 3.3? I want to know, is it possible within the current 37 billion of visible policing to use of that base? And then I want to know, when did the negotiations with Treasury started regarding the additional 3.3? I mean, the new budget cycle submissions is now October, November, but was already started last year when the announcement was made, that you can just get clarity on that. And then in terms of the practical things, last week, Portfolio Committee, the oversight visit to the Lianga Police Station. And during that interaction, we raised several issues with regard to also public order policing, intelligence in terms of information seeking. It was quite clear from initial observations that there is a problem of coordination. Now, we are a week later in the same environment, there was violent protest, 4 or 5 buses were attacked and so on, and one taxi driver lost his life. And there's media reports this morning that information was already available on Saturday evening before the week. Now, the question is, during the budget hearings, I think you made a commitment in terms of all-time intelligence that they will be integrated teams. And the same question goes also to public order policing. If that is the model, is it currently being implemented or is it still in the pipeline? Because it's quite clear, just looking at the younger issue as a snapshot, clearly, there should have been, credible intelligence, credible information available to the virtual role players and then for the public order policing to come. So, if we can just get clarity, is the information gatherers issue, is it still in the model phase or is it currently in the implementation phase? Honorable Abbasi.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks, General Mawela, for your presentation. My first question is, you spoke of vehicles that are being boarded. As they are being boarded, do you get the replacement? And you touched on the reduced rounds. To me, it sounded like they are not deadly. Are they deadly? My next question is, in the summer of 2013, the president made a call for JCPS to prioritize investigation of public unrest. In your slide, you showed 000, so I do not understand that. How do you get around it? My next question is on, it was reported that the basic crowd management training will be included in the basic police training from 2013. This is happening. Can I go on? Okay. You mentioned the design phase. Who are the designers? And what cost are we talking of in this designer phase? In planning to build accommodation for 26 units, new units, who will be building this unit? Is it staff or Department of Public Works? Thank you.
Honorable Lassa, Honorable Kuala? No. Honorable Mula? Honorable Kuala Bana?
Thank you, Chair. Three questions from my side. I've looked through the documentation and I'd like some additional figures, please. I'd like to know how many protests, violent protests, how many protests there were in the province. Let's look at, say, the last 6 months. How many of them turned violent per province? Because I wish to compare the numbers of the POP units assigned to each province to the number of violent protests they're having to deal with. I mean, certainly we're looking at a rollout plan and we're looking to sign off on that, but we cannot compare how many members there should be in each popular per province until we know exactly how many violent protests there have been. For example, I saw there were 352 POP members in the Western Cape. But in relation to how many violent protests, there were 484 Limpopo in relation to how many violent protests. Secondly, since when is it the job of Metro Police officers to involve themselves in crowd management? It seems to me it's totally out of their given mandate, which is in terms of implementing municipal bylaws. They're paid for by ratepayers. So I'm not sure how that's come about and why they're being used by the SAPs to be trained to do a SAP job. And finally, in the 2011-2012 budget, there was an issue in relation to irregular expenditure identified in respect of the refurbishment of the Nyalas. That was due to what they claimed was poor planning and the increase in the contract price might have constituted an issue in relation to the tenders, but it went to an investigation and the claims of irregular expenditure, National Treasury cleared it and said it was fine, but it tells me that at that stage there was already extensive refurbishment of Nyala going on. So the question has to now be, you're looking for another 3.3 billion rand, which includes the refurbishment of current 200 Nyalas. What happened to the Nyalas that were refurbished in 2011 and 12 and 13? Or is this a totally different consignment? Or are we talking about same Nyalas? I thought they were actually quite a limited number within that. So please just explain what has happened to the refurbished ones. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take these questions and I'll recognize other members. We'll come back to you, Honourable Montiba, Mark, Hayden, Bailey. We'll come back to you. Honourable, Special Commissioner, anything?
Yes, that's it. For those questions, I will tackle them together with the team. The first two questions that you asked us was around our budget. And the question you are asking is, have we started talking to National Treasury? Is it new engagement? First, let me reiterate and underscore the fact that we have reorganized to source this 45 million or so that we have referred to from the budget that we're existing. So already under pressure. It's definitely this accelerated development in POP cannot be accommodated in the baseline. Otherwise there would be serious impact on other offerings that we are having. So this is why we were able to reorganize at least 45 million to assist us to do certain things. Regarding whether we started talking with Treasury, yes, in the previous MTSF we had already started factoring this amount. And I just want to say, in the previous year, I'm talking about 45 million now, in the previous year we made available almost 60 million to start working on some of these issues. So we put it in the past MTSF, we will factor it in again, and we've been very articulate that we need a new injection into our baseline. And we are mindful of the fact that it's not the type of amount that you can offer all at once. We're looking at the progressive allocation to deal with those things that are priorities at a particular given time. So, as I said, that's the issue around the coordination and issues of whether this the separated offering as well as the availability of intelligence in some of these environments. You would have seen in the numbers that General Mawela is talking about, where we are starting to talk about the dedicated intelligence offering into the scheme that we're talking about. And also looking at new intelligence products, because it remains a crucial for them as you're putting it that if there's going to be a blockage of road of roads the following day, somebody in the community knows. So we need to look at, you know, maybe renewed products also in terms of the collection of our public order policing services. Currently, we're using our available intelligence that is being used for all other sorts of offerings within the police service. But what we're looking at now is to ensure that we have some dedicated into those teams that General Powell is talking about. That's why you would have seen the secondary numbers that he has given in terms of other skills that we require in the public for the policing unit. Honourable members, after a number of questions, the question of men has been voted and replacement. I'll also be touching probably through this answer on the, some of the questions that have been asked by Honourable Kola Banner. Fleet management of the units such as Nellers are almost like you're managing trail coaches or you're managing aircraft. It's mega investment. You would have heard that the average age, talking anything, plus 20 years of this unit. The 2010 refurbishment brought us some additional years on this unit. And it's not a type of unit where you go, you buy off the shelf. The development and the availability of the new units will take a few years. So it was necessary for us to refurbish A to be able to deal with the World Cup that was being that are taking place in our country. Also, secondly, to buy a space to develop a new generation here. So the replacement will be part and parcel of that process of ensuring that as we get the new one, we'll be able to board also those that we have been able to use to have an extended life on. But we can share maybe in more detail what the actual plan is for each one of them. But it's that process to say we bought them when they were about to give up. We extend us by refurbishing them. Now we are saying as we go forward, we need a new generation Niala, because this one we can just maintain for functionality, but for longevity, their lifespan is almost coming to an end. The issue of Regifram, General Mawela will touch on. The JPPS issues, indeed, we have prioritized the issue of public order policing. You will note even how we approached the elections this year. Those visits to Oxford were not just police. It was the various departments that were involved because we realized that the police come at the tail end when everything has happened. But when you start looking at what constitutes this community process, many other things that have got nothing to do with policing. So it's important to bring the Department of Education to work with us to Goodman. It's important to bring the Department of Transport to look at the road issues. So we do a lot of integrated work with the various partners that are sitting in the JCPS cluster. And judging from the previous elections, I can assure you that that has done a lot for us. Just yesterday, we were in the JCPS cluster meeting, and we adopted a program of visits to follow up on the areas that we had visited before, because there were outstanding issues that we want to ensure that they are dealt with. There will be new hotspots, but we want to make sure that what was the hotspot in Manamulele or a hotspot in Sturt, so it does not become a perpetual hotspot. We might bring other role players to come and deal with it. There are new hotspots, you see what is happening in Kuruman, and we're saying, can we go and understand what is taking place before it actually becomes a very difficult situation? That approach we've adopted as a JCPS, and we find it very helpful. because all the other departments are able to participate in that area. Yes, the basic crowd management program has now been included in the training, of our police. It already started last year. The new intake would also be going through this. The design phase, I'm sure General Mawela will also touch on that, but I can tell the honorable members and the committee that in order to improve our buying and our offerings, we have entered into a memorandum of understanding with CSIR. They are our technology advisor, so they're there to assist us on multiple technology and business platforms. So in this design, that is the design phase that we're talking about, they are working together with our ORS environment to ensure that we can have a new generation MELA that can assist us to do, you know, to respond to public order policing needs of our terrain and the needs of our country. The building of new units, General Mawela will touch on that to say whether it is DPW, but most of them, as you would know, would be DPW. It would not be, if they are not evolved, unless they find it necessary to devolve them, then they will be handled by staff. But at this point in time, we have not as yet had them devolved, so DPW would be leaving that environment unless something happens. The other questions came from Honorable Mr. Barnett, Kola Barnett, how many per province, which checklist that we offer to break them down and be able to give you those. But one of the things I want to emphasize is that as you can see those numbers, we really handle a lot of protests, because whether it's violent or not violent, the community protests, we handle all of them. So as you can see, we handle almost in excess of 13,000 of those, and only less than 2,000 are violent. But General Mawela emphasized the fact that though the increase is minimal, we are noticing, but there is quite some increase on the not only on the non-violent ones, but quite a little bit of significant, noticeable increase on the violent ones. But out of the 13,000, 2,000 only are violent. And we call them community protests because not all community protests are physics related. There are many other issues that are sitting in community protests. So we are calling them back because we would like to differentiate between the various forms of protests that come from communities. The issue of metropolis, Honorable Korabana, our constitution talks about a single police service. And whether we would like to ignore it, there are people who arrive at the scene first before others. And there is no way that your metropolis and our visible policing members would ignore attending to any situation as it happens before the specialists come. The purpose of this first multiplier training is to ensure that those that arrive at the scene first must be able to ensure that they manage the scene appropriately while they are waiting for the accident. So it is important for all metropolis to have first responder training on public order management. We've extended that also to ensure that our vehicle members in the station will also get, some have already received, some will be receiving, more will be receiving, so that people who come to the scene of a public disorder are able to have the skills to manage that first response as they get to that scene. So with the Metro Police, that is what we're doing. We had a meeting with the police chiefs last week. In fact, they really appreciate this responsibility. And I think it is equally responsible for all tiers of government, for us at national and at the local level, that we know that there is all-round guaranteed good and professional treatment of public order in the environment. So this is where we're coming from. when we say we give those skills and the partners that are necessary skills, citizens can know that they have people who know what to do when this type of things are happening. The issue of irregular expenditure, honorable member, you have clearly indicated that this matter was dealt with by the AG investigators and in case we were cleared by the Treasury, we appeared in SCOPA, so that matter has been regularized. It was not fruitless, it was irregular, but we're also clear on that one too. Thank you. There were just one issue.
Maybe in terms of your responses to the questions, I wanted to know in terms of that 3.3, what do we need in this year in terms of the current budget? And then your response is in effect saying there isn't currently any integrated teams on the ground and available to deal and assist the public water policing. Now, if that is so, what are the plans to ensure that they are in place? Because, I mean, that is the ideal situation. If there is knowledge of protests or violent protests, public water policing might be part of the environment. And the question is, you know, it's good to integrate it here, but in a clear timeline. If it's not there, what is the police management doing to ensure that it's integrated?
I will touch on some of those issues, but we do have integrated to use what we are having now. For instance, for all our session committees, the great lawyer comes up. But we are still going forward with even serious personalized dedication to that team. So we would have a dedicated detective to say, when we are in this space, we should allocate a detective to go and work with this team. But on a borrowed basis, so we want dedication and to ensure that when we talk about a team, we talk about complete whatever. So currently we're doing something, but we could do them better if we even train and dedicate on a full-time basis. Gentlemen.
Sorry, Commissioner, I must take you on this one. During the budget hearing, it was indicated that in terms of your testimony before the committee, that the approach would be going forward in terms of public water policing, especially with dealing with intelligence, that they will be part of multi-sector teams assisting those units. So the question from our side is, it is clear from your response that there isn't currently those integrated teams on the ground dealing with public water policing, thereby information gatherers as well as intelligence people are not currently there. So from a policy point of view, and as an institution, where the public committee wants to know when is those multi-sector teams going to be in place and what is the output in the rollout? Because it takes, in effect, instances like a younger, if you want to be practical, and this policy committee needs assurances that going forward, and especially with the cash spend that you are requesting from us, especially that there is the necessary force multipliers, also in terms of information gatherers and crime intelligence in those environments to assess. Otherwise, we're really in a situation where we won't be able to make progress. So we really need a commitment from yourself.
Gentlemen, we'll touch on this, but I can assure you that as I teach every morning, if I voice my box now, I will have received already, for instance, the stability report that tells me what's happening in each of the areas. Some things may over, with maybe not notice, but ordinarily we are able to provide as of now, routine. But Gentlemen, I want to touch on this.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, thank you very much. So to add on what the National Commissioner has said, the current setup in terms of information gathering, intelligence collection, and flow of information from those who are gathered to the unit, what we have currently is that each and every public order unit is having what we call the information gatherers. They go out, they do what is necessary, and then they keep it. Yes. Yes, the information gatherers. Secondly, the intelligence officers attached to the division of intelligence, they also continue to go out and do what they are doing to collect what they are collecting. All this information is centralized at a certain point within the division of intelligence. we have done is to link the cell phones of each and every unit commander of public order police with the nodal point of climate changes to alert them of any incident or any unplanned or spontaneous protest action which is happening in the country. Upon they pick them up, they send it through the SMS to the unit commander. That's one. The second system we have put in place is through the email. All the unit commander's emails addresses are also listed in that modal point. Maybe hourly, if there is something new which they must know, that information is disseminated to the unit commander so that they must respond. But honorable chairperson, honorable members, we have said that this system is not adequate. Hence, we are coming up with the wrong strategy for this operational support. To recruit more information gatherers so that we can have enough ground coverage. Currently, we don't have enough ground coverage, but each and every unit is having its own information gatherers. People overlap and send it through. But again,
you are slightly interrupt. You are currently directly contradicting slide 25 of the presentation this morning. In terms of that presentation, information gathered is actual personnel zero. So, I mean, can you just clarify for us? We are currently, but in terms of your presentation this morning, it's indicated as zero.
Thank you, Chairman and honorable members. I think it is a mistake on our part. We do have information gatherers. Each and every unit does have information gatherers, but they are...
No, that's okay. So you're saying that this presentation is incorrect?
No, this slide, honorable Chairman and honorable members, I think we should have two information gatherers. We made a mistake in terms of the information gatherers. Made a mistake.
But that is very, very serious. I mean, coming before the portfolio committee of police and not supplying us the correct information is not correct. Can we have a clarification maybe from the National Commissioner?
Okay. Chairperson, I think what we shall do is to provide you with the number of current information gatherers that you are having in the public order police, whatever, and we want to apologize for the reflecting it as such.
I think we will need to talk in your slide because apparently the slide doesn't count up. So that is very, very serious. I mean, because we as a committee, as I indicated in the beginning, we want to ascertain what are the needs in terms of this very important thing, our sector. And we are clear wrong information, incorrect. We are not going to support any request in that regard. We need the correct information. And government department has got a duty, the monitoring and evaluation, the strategy unit, in the offices of the accounting officer, they must ensure that they scrutinize these submissions that come to Parliament. Otherwise, you know, we're wasting people's time, and citizens of South Africa will say, well, is that the situation? So really we need the commitment that this will be reworked and we will have to get a proper indication of what is the situation. I think let's continue to other areas and get responses on that as well.
Chairperson, will do it. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable chairperson and honorable members. It will be provided. The second one is towards the issue of accommodation, and then you have covered on it. It will be done by GPW, and the design of the HECM, it will be done by the CSIR based on the memorandum of understanding with HHU, with the CSIR. The issue of the Metro Police, the National Commissioner covered it, but what we are saying to reinforce what the National Commissioner said is that most or more often is that the Metro Police, they are the first on the scene when things happen. So therefore we felt on our part that we need to empower them with the knowledge and skills that when they arrive at those spontaneous incidents, what must they do? So that is the reason behind to empower them with those knowledge and skills. And again, we we do have some of the marches and protest actions which are not violent in nature. When you see in the election for meeting, together with the metros, the convener, the responsible officers and so forth, we see that these are the peaceful people, don't march, there won't be any problem. So, who can manage or escort that kind of a procession? That's when we should decide in that kind of a system. We need to say that Metropolis, you can't escort this procession because of it won't be of violent nature. Even the people who are protesting, maybe it is not an emotional thing we are protesting about, which may end up maybe during the crowd dynamics they end up being violent. So we think it is important for them to be capacitated with that knowledge and skills. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do not know the protocol of the police if it's appropriate to speak after my national commissioner, but your permission and their permission, if I could just add to the questions.
Your permission is granted.
Thank you kindly. Chairperson, honorable members, I could just mention in terms of that specific slide, there's no dedicated personnel that's exclusively dealing within the investigating officers, information gatherers, or legal officers. But the detective services have identified 115 members spread all over the country that will be responsible, so that if there's any unrelated investigations, that it will go to those members. There's also 40 DPCI investigators that was made available and identified in terms of dealing specifically with aspects within their mandate, specifically crimes against the state. And then the legal officers, as General Mawela mentioned, that per province, there's not a dedicated per unit, but per province there are officers that is responsible to deal with that. We also did an integrated training session in July of last year, when we trained 49 members from public order policing, some of these detectives, crime intelligence and legal services, and it was comprehensive training dealing with various modalities in terms of their understanding the environment and working together. If I may further also indicate in terms of the question to Honourable Colonel Barnard, in terms of the distribution, part and parcel of this enhancement is to ensure that there is equal distribution of all resources. So the current distribution is not necessarily in line with the spread of unrest related cases. In our organizational development feasibility study, it was identified that Gauteng is the leading province in terms of 21.6% of unrest crime values in terms of the value that they did, and then Western Cape with 13.8%, KwaZulu-Natal 12.9%, and then Northwest in Mpumalanga. So if you look in terms of the current availability and you would divide that same percentages, we will see that Western Cape, for instance, they would meet more or less 500 to 550, and there are 352. Whilst Gauteng would need about 800 and then 568. But that is what we intend to rectify in terms of the distribution of the resources. And then if I could just mention in terms of the Nyalas, we currently have 363 Nyalas, so it's not limited only to the 200. Then there's also 88 vehicles that's known as a non-quite, which is an earlier version of the Nyala, and also Caspers. So even though there was a refurbishment of 200, it is not necessarily those vehicles that will be refurbished in terms of us going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, maybe let me just wrap up to say, the number that you are mentioning in terms of respective DPCI vehicles shows again that we did not want to wait for new manager to come up before we do something else. We've had to have add-on functions to other people to say, even though you are a detective and doing your work, part of your sub-dedicated function will be to ensure that when we have public order policing cases, you investigate them. Same for DPCI, same for our legal people who are actually stretching what we're having now. But what we have presented to you is what we require going forward as part of our ideal setup of accelerating and rebuilding this re-established public order policing function.
Johnny, we hear you, Commissioner, but we need a minute slot to indicate the Honourable Mark, Honourable Mabija, Mbele, Kuhika, and Honourable, sorry, Honourable Mark, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to clarify myself, because my understanding is not my duty to defend the department, but my understanding would be that the public order policy, so they wouldn't have their own gatherers. Every gatherers would be at police station. I'll be corrected if I'm wrong. Gatherers would be at the police stations, as we were told, under, what do they call them, crime information officers that are located in police stations. It wouldn't make sense to me for a public order policing units to have their own gatherers, because according to me, they are called when there's troublesome. And surely they wouldn't have their own detectives, because they are just people who are called when there's trouble. That would be my understanding, unless if it's otherwise, and I'm subject to be corrected. So how would I understand the 00 day? But my question was on the intelligence that what was the situation before? Did each and every police station have an intelligence office? That is before now, because now they are having a crime information office. And if there is an intelligence officer, would it be somebody that you would know? Well, that one in this office is doing crime intelligence. Or if that is not the case, then it means they might already be dead. I'm not sure how that is going to be answered, but intelligence is something else. I mean, if we know that you are an intelligence officer in here, in the office, then it would be very difficult to have your team piece, because each one that you are standing with would say it is one of your own. So I would like to understand, did we before have intelligence officers, or are we suggesting that we must have you? It must be a new thing, and in what format would we have those intelligence officers? And just for my understanding, the National Joint Operations Center, who it comprises of what unit or what is it? And then the Kabazimbi training facility, is it only for the public order policing, or is it a general training facility? I think for now, that would be my questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. During the first response to the first stage, the Commissioner responded to answer my question before I could pose it, so I'm covered.
Chairperson, I see clarity on two sides to give different interpretations of the human resource allocation. On one of the slides, it indicates the current personnel establishment of the unit is 4,721, and on another slide it shows, I can't recall the slide now, but it shows an indication that the personnel establishment is around 4,800. In the one it refers to that in 4 years time that they would like to stand at 9,522 within 4 years time, and it indicates the number of personnel that should be recruited for each of these years leading up to the fourth. To the 4 years. Now my question is to the police, how do they intend getting into the 9,522 without taking or mentioning any challenges pertaining to
personnel that did leave the service also during this 4-year period to arrive at the 9,522. Then other area that I would like to go to is in terms of, I have noticed that they are acquiring video recording, and the personnel that will handle this video recordings, especially on scenes. I was witness on a lot of occasions. It seems to me, my perception might be wrong, the fact that I don't have formal training in this regard, is how do you, as a police officer that is recording, it seems more to me that these people are agitating community members when they are on scene pertaining to the recording of incidents. And I can mention the one. If you look at the five people that was recently arrested and at Cape Town Central for in terms of the Free Palestine movement, they were released 2 or 3 days after that. But on that Sunday evening when they were arrested, it was a clear indication that the persons of the police involved with the recording, they were actually agitating to start the public there. Then the other area, it seems that the police have a challenge pertaining to gathering of information. Now, I would like to know what are the police doing, and specifically the unit pertaining to improve stakeholder relations, because if they can improve the stakeholder relations through the community police forums, it will also assist them. But I want to know specifically what are they doing in this regard to improve the stakeholder relations.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Bailey, and then Honourable Malabasi.
Thank you, Chair. I have about 4 or 5 questions. My first question, which was touched on relating to a question from Honourable Caller Barnard, is just to get clarity what informs the distribution of the POP units in terms of the provincial breakdown. It's already been conceded that there has been understaffing in some provinces in relation to population. But it's not clear yet whether the criteria are primarily intelligence driven in terms of actual number of incidents based on trends, or if it's about population. And so we just like some clarity on that. Secondly, a question on whether there's been any analysis and exploration on the use of camera-mounted unmanned aerial vehicles or drones. Because the session on equipment and the increase in equipment for the POP units mentions cameras, but just looking at some international trends, I didn't hear any mention of whether drones have been considered. If not, is that an area that could be looked at? If it has been looked at, what were the findings that indicated against us? My third question is just for the officers to please elaborate on the model approach that has been put out. There's model 1 to 6, which each level indicates certain personnel competence. What are the criteria in distinguishing between those model tiers and the allocation of the different model units in different areas that we saw in the one table? My last question, I think, is just to be clear, is the current financial year, that's 2014-15, what is referred to as year one in the roll-ups of the turnaround strategy, just so that we can be sure that we're talking about the same financial years, in fact, in year one, year two, year three, year four. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Just one question that was not answered. About the 15 deaths related to crowd management, what happened to the police officers who were involved? Thank you.
Thank you. I have seen in use and done a bit of research on chest mounted cameras that are now in certain areas of the world compulsory for all tax members on duty to wear at all times. And I just wondered if our data management team has considered, especially in light of these fatality incidents that are filmed by other people, in other incidents, it would provide perfect coverage of exactly who did what, when, at all times, and also may moderate violent behaviour on the part of SACS members. So I wondered if such a system has been considered or should be looked into by SACS. Thank you.
Oh my goodness.
I remember
for the wrong reasons. State Divisional Commissioner, Cooperation and Response Services,
That was what we just did an analysis of the whole country in terms of all under this religious crisis. Then we've broken it down to province and we've seen two provinces in one part. That's really 1.6 was for Gauteng. Out of all the under this religious crisis in Gauteng, there's only 1.6 of the crisis. Now I know. Yes, it was only under it, not in the whole part of the country, but there was under this crisis, so the more worried was.
The whole proposal is then to have equal distribution in terms of a scientific approach.
363.
No, I just think I mentioned that.
Yeah, right.
Members, maybe we can maybe start in the next 2 minutes. I'll appreciate them. That's all.
Information officers, gatherers, and people we have.
First, in all the stations, we have what we would call the Crime Intelligence Analysis Center. They take all information that we are having, whether it's from our operations, from our OB, from our tech systems, from the detectives that we use, from the ordinary information that we are having, and analyze it for us to be able to give us the crime patterns in the organization and the some of the modus operandi that comes with those funds in the particular cases. And those people are inbound. They are in the office, they are sitting there on a daily basis. They do the work for us. They would also contribute to what the performance checking of each station. Those are the crime intelligence analysis center bound people. We then also have what we call crime intelligence gatherers. Those would be attached to our crime intelligence and largely in the task force covering a number of the stations. They are outward bound. They are out there in the community to collect information to ensure that they data and they are connected to the crime intelligence model center, giving information there. And all of us in the station, whether you are the detectives or whether you are in POC, whatever, we would be connecting with them to be able to use the gathering that they have. The zero that you have seen today refers to what we call information officers. They are part and parcel of each HOC unit because they are there to collect the information of each and every unit. They would collect information, but they would not be as incisive as your gatherers that are the crime intelligence gatherers. They collect information raw, they don't do much analysis and all this. So what the zeros that we were talking about, where we have to revise the slide for you, talk to this information officer. But as we go forward, we're actually saying it is important for us to have even the crime intelligence gatherers dedicated to this unit so that we don't just have the information gathering that lacks the incisive intelligence. So that's what we're talking about. So I'm hoping that that will, as we revise, we'll also put those formulas and show where they're sitting. We'll also be able to say to you, for instance, we receive on a daily basis a stability report that will come from the network, and then Norma will come and respond to that aspect that's being asked. And then we will get a team of reports that comes from a crime intelligence lab to say, you know, on an incisive and specific basis. So we will put in that revised slide also those issues to say what our sources of information and who's where and who's doing what and how do we connect EOP to all these sources of information. Honorable Mike also raised the issue of saying, when we talk about detectives, are we talking about certain detectives for POC? When we talk about dedication, we are saying, yes, your detectives who are better belonging to the detectives, but what we require from the detective environment is actually to say, as and when we are having an operation and a unit that is functioning, there's somebody else who say, I am, as part of my job, dedicated to support Unit X, to ensure that if the detective work to be done, my additional responsibility is to ensure that the cases that they are investigating, I'm dedicating them, they are not as part of the pipe. They know that that will be part and parcel of their performance management to look at whether all the detection work that is happening in that unit is being given attention. So that's where we talk about dedication. The same as the legal people, we are saying they are part and parcel of the legal unit, are they specially supporting human resources, are specially supporting POC, so that they ensure that when they are the section, whatever it is, there's somebody they go to. They don't just go to a pool of departments of legal people to say, we were in a municipality, there was nobody. We want dedication so that we can know that the legal person X is part and parcel of team Y. So if anything goes wrong with a certain form meeting or that older child of meeting, we know which legal person to talk to. So that's where the increased capacity will be required to ensure that
providing the various information sources. The CI officers that are those we will submit it also with the access. General Mawela, you will come in touch on the issue of the network. This covers in the center that we are talking about. It is a center that will deal with all our tactical type training, whether it's K9, whether it's border, whether it's our specialist units, because that's where we are looking for all the specialist skills that we need in policing. So it's focusing on all those, and it allows us, space, as General Mawela said, to, you know, create various geographic scenes and terrain scenes that we require to get our members trained. The question around attrition. Attrition is given in any human resources environment. We will cater for it. You know, we wouldn't be able to create it. We use norms in terms of looking at our attrition to say what the average attrition rate in sub, is it 3%, is it 10%, and in the public service, what's the accepted norm. So we use those type of variables to deal with issues related to attrition. And the issue of recording, agitating members of the public, if policing on its own has got an agitating effect, and I can understand that it should have even intensified agitation when we have cameras, but unfortunately, it is a matter of practice, I think of protocol, to ensure that we gather evidence of whether it's not violent. We must be able to account for each and every process that we manage. The records must be kept, and evidence must be recorded. And that type of evidence is also important to deal with the prosecution issues. So it is international practice to record this type of issue. And I guess this is why issues are being raised in terms of what other platforms, forms of recording can be used over and above the ones that you've mentioned. So I think it's a responsible practice to ensure that you record and capture in an objective sense what is happening, so that it's not a here they did, she said, they said, we said, we're not able to account. I think accounting is important for us. Fact-based evidence is also very important. Honorable Mbele, you mentioned the issue of what gathers in our distribution. I want to refer us to slide 9 because we tried to show some of the things, the criteria where our OG has done some research to look at what we guide, how we deal with distribution of some of these assets. So we would, but as the weighting in terms of the indicators that would influence how we deal with our allocation, but also when you look at how we also like 21 also, where we talk about the IRIS, we look at the incident rate of each of the provinces and the areas. We also use the data that comes from FSA to also look at the population numbers and all those type of things. So the combination of those things that are sitting in slide 9, as well as the incident rate that are captured in our IRIS system, as well as the data in terms of a population segment as per FSA. Both yourself, Honorable, and Honorable Colabana raised the issue of mounted cameras. We are looking at a number of opportunities. So the website that is in progress that PSI are further researching for us is to look at some of the ideas that you are mentioning, and I can assure you that it is in the budget as part of the offerings that are being explored for possible improvement of our recording equipment. I can also mention that, for instance, in our water cannon, there is a recording capability that we are now starting to train a lot of the members on the digitalization. So that whole issue of gathering evidence in an objective and factual manner is very paramount in what we are doing. The modeling was also to what I've already mentioned in terms of like 9 as well as the IRIS-BES and FFA sectors. The financial year that we're talking about, as soon as we allocated new money, we probably will then, we hope that 15-16 would be our year one, because right now we're still using a lot of baseline and support. The fund actually, it doesn't represent the actual start in terms of the treasury service that we're asking for. So if there is some treatment, but we didn't take 2014-15 as our new year, it's just indicated that it's not actually the new year. We're hoping that this NGSF would give us something so that we can take a period of rolling out for the 3 years. I think we'll touch on those. Get on our list. Can you give me the next one?
Thank you, General. Thank you, Honorable Chairman and Honorable members. The question was, who sits in the National Joint Operational Center? We have representatives from the JTPF member departments, and on a regular basis, depending on the situation which we are dealing with, we co-opt the primary department which may be affected. So, for example, we are dealing with the issues of affecting the schools, then we'll have somebody from the Department of Education, whom the department is not a member of the JCPS, also participating in the National Joint Operational Center. And what they normally do, they generate stability reports on the real-time basis. Whatever is happening on the ground, they generate that information, disseminate accordingly, and also mobilize the required support and resources for the particular area which requires that kind of assistance. Second one is about the issue of the blue and white ammunition used by the force, whether it's deadly or not. We say it is lesser. It can be deadly if incorrectly used, but if it is correctly used, it is less lethal. It cannot cause fatalities. Thank you, President.
Chair, there was one question which would require clarity on honorable members who referred to 15 deaths.
In 2012-2013, 15 deaths related to crowd management. My question was, what happened to the officers who were involved? Thank you.
I think we would need to look at those tests because they seem to be something that can be responding to that.
We'll go into the next round. Just a moment. Just three questions from my side and answer your question. The first one is in terms of Doc Reed, of POPs in South Africa. 3 years ago, there was a debate, and I think it's a bit of secretary of that process, and a mention made of the French model and various models, and Belgium and so on. I'd want to get an indication from a philosophical point of view. Where are we currently? Is it based on any other jurisdictions model, or is it really a South African approach in terms of benchmarking, just to give an indication in terms of that? Then the National Commission indicated that the multisectoral or later research agreements with the CSIR, maybe just to give an indication, is there a memorandum of understanding? And if there's a multitude of products or projects, if we can maybe get more detail on that going forward. And then the National Commission indicated that the rollout now is not really for next year, but for 2016. Now the question again from our side is the committee going into the BRRR process is, we're talking about 3.3, and you've used 45 from the current baseline.
And the previous.
Yeah. What do you need as a ballpark figure for assistance in this, because the committee's got the power to make that recommendation going forward. What is the minimum you will need for year one? You can say, well, we can't get the total new baseline now, but from the committee side, what is the minimum you will need? If you can just motivate that question. We're up in the BRRR process in October, we're currently busy with our
prep for that, and I mean, this is a vital area, so if you could just maybe also indicate that. Honourable Member from Mahamdi Dog.
Thanks,
sir.
Sure. My question relates to the authenticity of the pictures which are taken at the scene of crime or where the protests are taking place. Can't these pictures be doctored? And who guarantees the authenticity of these pictures until they reach where they are seen as evidence? I think, or another thing is it possible that the cameraman can just focus on what he wants, not exactly on what is happening there? Thank you.
Honorable Olabasi, Honorable Dwala.
My question is, how many females are employed in COP units? What is the cost implication for running the reverse COP unit? My next question is, the 10 water cannons, are they enough, especially that most of the toilets are violent, are they the 10 enough? There is only one target in the ACT for BOP. Why is that the case? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Nine, two. How many positions have been filled and who is your training to the provider? Thank you.
Hello, Marky.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question would be on slide number 5. I think it doesn't indicate. I was just thinking to myself, or is there an increase in the unrest and an increase in the protest, or because it doesn't indicate the increase in the population, doesn't indicate an increase maybe in new settlements, which definitely, as the years go by, there will be an increase as the population increases, even if it's not ideal. So I was just thinking, does this give me a true reflection if it's not weighted against an increase in new settlements, new squatter camps, and so on and so on? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Marky. We will take these questions and then we'll come back for the final round.
few members. Honourable, yeah. If members can just indicate in the next round, and we will give them an opportunity to set.
Chairperson, the first issue you raised was around the doctrine adopted. I think we have come to realize that we find ourselves in a unique situation as a country. So to the extent that we borrow, learn from others, it is for us to adapt and develop a South African response. So my response to your question would be that, in essence, I think what this is with the South African approach, because the nature of the community and rest, the circumstances that we find ourselves in, the trajectory we've traveled as a country in terms of expressing our concerns and our needs is very different from other environments. But we do use them as a platform to learn, to look at best practice, equipment, and all those things that we can use, and looking at expert inputs from that. So from that point of view, we would like to say it's a South African approach. The CSI asked Chairperson, yes, we have a formal memorandum of understanding, and we chose the CSIR because it's a government entity. We have looked at the track record in assisting various departments in their renewal, in their modernization processes. They cover a number of areas for us. We look at the broad technology environment and our existing environment. We look at our specialist equipment environment like engineers and all those. We ask them to look at our diverse systems, to look at how they can help us redesign, to have integrated technology offerings. So they do a number of things for us in terms of those. And we also have to be begging on the other strong relationships they would have with entities such as AMSCO that also play a role in assisting us to develop some of these future technologies. So that whole lot of government research and technology-based institutions are assisting us quite significantly. But it's structured. We have a memorandum of understanding, and we have had permission from the Treasury. We wrote to request that type of engagement, and we've been given permission to do so. Yes, Chairperson, we will come back to you. We will go and read the ask, so that we say, if you were to assist us, well, how do we then start talking about very immediately that we have, given the constraints that we recognize government has in terms of resources. So we shall be, in our response, we will be able to correct you on that one.
The authenticity of pictures was the other question that was being asked.
Being a non-technological person, what I've seen a little bit, for instance, in some of the commissions that I participated in, is that a lot of this new technology, and I'm sure the gentlemen that are sitting around here would be able to tell you that probably even if you doctor, the technology audit or the system audit would be able to tell you that this thing of doctor somewhere else something happens. But we would look into that and ensure that we also invest in terms of our technical capacity, the ability to assess and to ensure that we look at how we store, record the pictures that are being taken. And I'm sure General Alan Gage and Mawela can also talk to that. But that quality assurance process, we may have to look into, we know the issues that you're raising. The cameraman focusing, defocusing, I'm sure it can happen anywhere where, when pictures are taken, the cameraman may be interested in a blue shirt while something is happening with somebody in a red shirt elsewhere. So I guess part of the training that we're talking about is to ensure that we skill them in a manner that they are able to assist us to capture as much as possible
we will have to look at some of those issues to scope them in our objective information gathering to ensure that we are able to capture as much as is possible to be able to tell a story of what has happened in the sea. Honourable members, I shall acknowledge that the issue of gender representativity in our public order policy is an area that we are grappling with. It's slightly below our normal rate of gender representativity, which is about 34% female. I think in this environment we may well be in our early 20s, but we will be able to check those and report it back to the committee. It is an area that we are giving attention to. The training is rigorous, and what we are also looking into is the fact that I use a very simple point of reference to say, even in both, there's a CEO for women and a CEO for men. So maybe we have to look at adjustable training so that we can get more women being able to participate in some of these environments. Currently, we are having common training for everybody, and because of probably our physiological makeup, we're not able to all cross the fences that they are able to jump as women. So we're looking at into those things, but we can give a small explanation and report in terms of how we are addressing those accelerated training aspects. Jenna Bekele is here with us, and I think in charge of HRT, she has a lot to tell around these issues, but we will also submit that to you. The cost implications of having a centralized unit, I think it's just another unit, but what the beauty of that, the reason for having that unit is to say, if there is pressure in any province, we should be able to give additional support before we drain other provinces, because as the Act has it, I'm able to talk to each of the provinces to say, can assist province-wise. But before you drain, if you are having 9, 40 provinces, you must be able to say from the centralized unit, we are able to send 20 in Mpumalanga, 20 in Free State as additional support. So it's important for us to be able to do so. While we are saying we need it in other provinces, we are saying they will still have a national place, but we want community to say, if they are in Western Cape, you are able to, in a quick response, send them to both Western Cape and Eastern Cape. And then if they are maybe somewhere in Cape and you are able to, in a quick response, send them to Western Cape, to KZN and maybe State or KZN and Mpumalanga. So that's what we're trying to do, because the responses are so quick, you need almost ASAP. So that's where this thing is taking. The water payments are not enough. We have also scoped them into this process, and we're also talking to CSR about that so that we can look at locally produced water payments, because they're a little bit costly. We currently import those, because they are not locally produced. So we're looking at them working on a localized prototype. Maybe they could, we could be able to have one. And when all is said and done, we'll have each unit. At least how many, is it all clusters, or how many units do we want? Is it clear?
Currently, we have 10, and then we want to have at least one per unit. And the unit we are currently getting in 2028.
Yes.
But in terms of our plan, as a starter, maybe it would be good if we increase to 2 per province, because these figures are quite expensive. Right.
If you are having 2 venue platforms in a province, you can only have it in one. So it's important for us to work on those, because they are helpful. The indicator where you say we have one, basically we're saying it is neither a lot, but we're saying it's 100% public stability that we're looking for. But I'm sure we can
break it down a little bit to say what are the issues we are looking for there. But the why we have one is that we are saying we need public stability, 100%. The issue of that was raised by Honorable Member Chuala, indeed, public order policing is an end-of-line intervention. It means a lot has happened before, and we can only support the sentiment that is expressing to say we need other processes upstream to ensure that we don't deal with the downstream element, and that requires more intervention. The community outreach initiatives that we're having, the gatekeeper approach that we're starting to engage in, is trying to echo some of the sentiment that is raising, and we agree that the police cannot be a panacea for everything. The training provider, Honorable Mother, a lot of our training in the police is in-house. We develop our curriculum, we have 26 training units, and we use those, we have the specialist unit in a Sabazini. So a lot of our training we offer ourselves. The last question was from Honorable Michael relating to slide 5. Indeed, you are correct. We need to factor in a number of issues that we are starting to factor in the lab, because what you have there is a straight line analysis in terms of the numbers, the ones that were non-violent and those that were violent, factors such as population growth and all those aspects are not taken into account. But what we shall do is just to give maybe a much more deep analysis so that we can capture the issues that you are raising in trying to give the additional meaning to that fact. Thank you, Chair.
Right, final round. I also have a few questions that are not available. Maybe just to come to the issue of the members serving in these units, because they are really actually the people that's doing the job. Now, I got last night a report from the Johannesburg Cops Unit as a case in study that apparently, well, since February is the situation, only 5 of their vehicles are working, and the commander has been transferred and has not been replaced. The invitation also of debriefing of members, it's stressful operations, it's taxing. What are we doing from a management point of view? For example, if Johannesburg case is correct in terms of the information I received, what are we doing to address those issues from a ground control issue? And the members are debriefing. If members are overstressed, what is the issues? Then in terms of the command control matter, what is the relationship between the national command and the provincial commissions, who's actually commanding those units at the provincial level? Is it there? Nasco, what is that line in terms of dealing with that? Honorable Mbele.
Thank you. My two questions are, firstly, on slide 28, it's mentioned that there have been 1,826 POP members receiving refresher training so far, and there's 2275 to receive that in the pipeline. My question is, what are the time frames around that next round of refresher training, so that we can get them to start and finish so that they're up to scratch? And by my calculations, those two figures together come to 4,101. And my question is, what about what's the status of the other 720 members who make up the current complement of 4,721? Have they already received the training before the 1826, or are they after the 2275? Just what's the status on that gap between the total of two figures on the slide and the 4721 complement we know of currently in place? And secondly, is in terms of the expansion and turnaround strategy to bring up the numbers, to what degree is there calling on previous experienced POP members
who were either transferred or let go as part of the establishment process some years back. Thank you.
Honourable Martin and Honourable Malabati.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm thinking, I was thinking about police brutality. Is there any criteria that is used? I'm saying this because yesterday I was watching some newspaper, I can't remember whether it was the Western or the Daily Sun or something of that nature. There was a policeman who was on the ground and somebody was beating him up, and another one was holding a big stone, which I thought wanted to crush the police ahead. So I was thinking, is there a criteria of brutality? I was just imagining, or if this policeman manages to wake up from there, from the ground, and trying to defend himself, we might call that brutality. But he himself is being brutalized. So do we have a criteria, or do the police simply follow what the public is saying about brutality? If it was a member of the public, it will already be in all these papers, TV and everywhere. But I haven't heard anybody talking about that brutality that I saw yesterday. So do we have a criteria of explaining what type of force must be used, and maybe in what circumstances? Because seemingly everybody is just thinking about police brutality, and if there's no measurement, or maybe I'm just thinking aloud to myself, there might not be an answer to that, but if there's any, I would be happy to listen to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Malcolm and Molabachi, and then we'll carry on.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Do you at any stage deploy untrained, ill-equipped, often unsupervised officers to a protest? Thanks, Chair.
I want some clarity on the figures that are given. We on 533 referred to 3.3 billion, that's over 4 years. I'm not altogether sure if that includes, for example, the 7 million per annum for the lease for accommodation, if it includes 1 billion for equipment, if it includes the 2.3 billion for human resources. Is that a total figure that we're looking at over 40 years? It does only say 70%, but we're looking at another tranche for the other 30%. I'm really not sure of how these figures add up. Perhaps they could attempt to clarify. Thank you.
Thanks. The other member, before we give an opportunity to SAPS. If there's an urgent matter, we will take that question, but then we'll go after this session, we'll go to the firearms registry. So, over to SAPS.
Thank you very much. The members that are serving in Gauteng, as well as the National and Provincial Command, the normal administrative, and I'll deal with the security issues.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you, with regard to command and control of the public order unit. The Police Act requires the National Commissioner to establish and maintain the National Force Unit through the Divisional Commissioner Operational Response Service. The day-to-day celebration lies within the authority of the Provincial Commissioner. coming to the unit in Johannesburg, the number of vehicles and the commander, surely I don't want to, yes, I need more information to check with them, and maybe we can respond in writing the status of that unit.
Shepherd, on the issue of our employee health and well-being, recognizing the fact that the job that we do, whether it's public order policing, whether it's forensic science laboratory where we manage crime scenes, whether it's a detective, policing is by nature a very traumatizing type of job. Then on the Keller who is here, the DMC for corporate services, it's busy with a very rigorous program of remodeling as well as renewing our employee health and well-being environment. In the EHW environment, we have a number of professionals. We have a set of psychologists who are more trauma-trained and trauma-focused in terms of their counseling. Within that, we also have a psychometric psychologist who do the assessment in terms of looking at the fitness for people to be in particular roles within the police. Then we have social workers. The social workers that are outside the social worker that we have in the forensic investigation stage. These are within EHW to look at the counseling of our members in terms of dealing with trauma issues. Then we also have a set of chaplains, whose role we are also expanding to ensure that they can assist us in various platforms of this whole employee health and well-being. As a matter of course, after each incident, the public order policing needs to be taken through debriefing processes because it's important for us to do so because of the burden of trauma that is carried by the various members. But for the case at the time right now, we are busy with the renewal of that program and looking at how else we can optimize the use of the resources that we are having. You know, for instance, our Germany, we're looking at a very strong aftercare program where members are, you know, maybe still having that even trauma post this type of intervention. So that is work in progress. At some point, it has a portfolio committee is ready and we are ready with our renewal program. We could check the issues in terms of that one. The questions that were asked by Honorable Mbele around the training and the numbers that he was referring to. First, let me upfront say the training that we're talking about is pressure training. It continues, it needs to be given to all our members over and over again. So the 2275 that we're talking about, we will be coming in also for their pressure. They are already trained as public order policing people, and we will be calling them in for that refresher training that they need to have. I've also mentioned in that category the fact that we also identifying care police stations, members from our Greenwood policing unit to ensure that they have first responder training because by the time the unit comes from somewhere and the patient is faced with something else, we need people that will go there. So refresher training is continuous and shall always be offered to members of POPS and those that we have identified to give them additional support. The issue of previous experienced POP members, General Moela earlier on mentioned the fact that in the new teams that they are looking into, we'll be advertising, looking for some of those skills to say as we bring in new people, they need to be blended with old people who have had the training before and have the experience. While it's going to put pressure on our other resources, we will open it up so that those that already have the skills, if they still wish to come back to this environment, given the parameters that they were set in POP, don't have an opportunity of also participating in that additional recruitment drive. Honourable Makhe, the issue of what you saw yesterday, I think it was in the citizens. So a very poor picture to look into. And I think somewhere else, the whole issue of balance between responsibility and rights is very crucial. And we're hoping that through our community outreach programs and other voices of society to best say, we cannot afford to be at loggerheads with the people that we are supposed to serve and protect. And where a policeman is lying down and being targeted in the name of public protest, it can never be good for any country. And we hope that we will have more and more voices that actually agitate or articulate the need to balance responsibility and rights. And in reality, I think any nation that does not respect their law enforcers tells another story. And we hope that they would give us mutual respect from us as police, respecting members of the public and members of the public, again respecting our position as officers in serving the nation to ensure that they remain protected. And I cannot, I look forward to actually endorse this sentiment of saying that mutual respect is crucial for any successful democracy. Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions from members? There's an issue at the back.
Oh yeah, there was a question, Chair. I'm sorry, can I just finish on that? I will get to you, Chair. The 3.3 on slide 33 is a composite, because I think it outlines what we are saying there to say, got to do with the refurbishment, the COP vehicles that were coming up, were proposing the accommodation of the units, the nitrogen facility that we required, because we've mentioned that it's on an ad hoc facility in the defense environment, the capability training, making it a center for excellence. So the numbers that you've seen before are actually now rolled together into that whole figure, but we would, as Chairperson has requested, break it down in terms of what we require as a media and rolling it out on the other day. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you. From the back benches, if I can just add to what the National Commissioner mentioned in terms of the refresher training, we must remember that the figure of 4721 also includes the so-called public service act personnel, so our generic support personnel, whilst the refresher training is only focused on the Public Water Police and Police Act members. Provision is made in terms of this year for another 408 people to be trained, and then the project will be concluded in the 16-17 financial year. Provision is made for the next financial year for 11 courses and then another 12 courses, which will then ensure that we have trained the 408 plus or another 1867 to reach the target that we set.
The question there was, this says the 3.3 million covers 70% over 4 years. So are we looking for an additional 30% of that figure to be added on after that to complete this process? So in fact, that's not the full figure. Is that what it's saying to me?
Any member, I think everybody, no questions anymore from any members.
Honourable Liberty asked whether we deploy any ill-equipped, ill-trained people. Our answer is no.
Right, thank you very much for cash management, for the presentation on public order policing. As I've indicated previously, this was a recommendation made by the portfolio committee that we will have this hearing, and we will on a quarterly basis get reports from the national management in terms of progress. From today's meeting, I think it's critical that we get a breakdown of that 3.3 million. We're not quite sure, what the exact figure is. And also the immediate needs. Because also clarification in terms of, from 2016, that's what I understand, it's not from the current year, so that we can get an indication of what is the needs also of course the also more information on that slide that caused a bit of confusion on what is the exact factual position that the US Committee can consider that. But more importantly, I think the Portfolio Committee will be on an oversight visit the third week of September, the last week. And I think we will have to go to a public work policing unit in Bukumaranda to go ourselves and see for ourselves what is the current state of equipment, what is the status of stock, in terms of the indications you gave here, in terms of what you want to do, whether it's country correct. So as a Portfolio Committee, will go there. We will engage with that public order position unit. And I think it's important we must also get a report on Johannesburg. What is the factual situation there? Is it correct that the survey is not been, you know, it's not a permanent position, and also the question of the levels? It's critical going forward that in terms of the recommendations raised by the committee, the commitments made by the executive, that there should be progress. We have a lot of, I think, plans on the table, but the Portfolio Committee wants to see what the status of those plans. And that's one thing I think we didn't get all the answers today. And if we can get that in writing, it would be appreciated, especially in terms of, course, the deployment, what is the exact situation. And I think after our site visit, we will then make recommendations at the end of September. We are critical for going forward. Going into the RRR process, we as a committee, we must know exactly what is the 3.3 million. What do you want additionally this year? If we don't know that, we can't really come with a report, and we take it as a portfolio committee open. We want to support this project, but then we must have the true picture. We can't bore on figures that's not, you know, break down. We can't approve that. It would be not would not be prudent from any portfolio committee, so we need really a breakdown of that 3.3 million, what we need immediately. That's going to be critical. So thank you very much, National Commissioner, for your presentation on that. And also to the small of that unit. We will immediately go then to the second briefing. Members will remember we had the firearms registry here 3 weeks ago. The members were not satisfied with the response, so we said, well, come back to us today with an action plan, and that we get that action plan in terms of firm dates, firm budget allocations, and that we look at it, and after that we will, of course, have an opportunity to engage and make recommendations. So without further ado, we will ask that session, Commissioner, from your side to do the presentation, and then we will give an opportunity to members also to engage. There is a presentation. I don't know where Mr. Gagarin has made it available. I will just ask them to do my copies of elements. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to come back to the house and to present on the approach we shall be adopting to implement some of the issues that we have presented in the previous setup. The scope of presentation, of course, we just want to again read the background, deal with a number of issues that we've been asked to present in terms of the indicators we need to achieve, as well as the target, the timeline, the related resourcing that is there. And as indicated in our opening class, we recognize the fact that you are here to present yourself the program
and you requested that in a period of 3 weeks we come back and present advanced propositions to yourself. Today we are here to present to you a detailed action plan on how we hope to take matters forward, and we have categorized the action plan. You will hear when General Luke is going to be doing a presentation. He will address issues that deal with the action plans that are related to service delivery, action plans that are related to corporate governance, issues relating to performance and the reporting thereof, issues relating to the people, human capital management that we need in that space, issues relating to our infrastructure needs, including information technology, as well as how we communicate with stakeholders that are utilizing the services from the service service. Without further ado, Chairperson, let me ask General Luke to go straight into the various dimensions of the action plan that we seek to present before you, Chair, and the South. Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. First, I will start with service delivery matters. Here it is to ensure effective, efficient and accessible service delivery to the client through the processing of our armed application. Our action step is products and services rendered within specified time frames, and the indicator will be a percentage compliance with specified time frames in respect of number of days to finalize the AM application, including renewals and competencies. The target is 90% finalized per annum. Financial costs that should be on the normal day-to-day. Second bullet, still under service delivery, is to review and revise the service delivery improvement plan. Here it will be the number of meetings with stakeholders, that is the National Convention of Arms Control Committee, dealers, hunters and collectors, attended to address service delivery. As the annual meeting schedule, the financial implications are 450,000 and 579,000 in the new financial year. Moving further on, we go now to corporate governance.
Can I just let me explain it to you and the oranges. When it is green, it means we've accommodated it. It is hitting in our baseline or in the, and when it is orange, it says that's where we need to reorganize our resources and find new money.
Moving on to corporate governance, here is to ensure effective governance and accountability through compliance practices and effective systems of risk management and internal control. The first section would be to design and implement a central farm register risk management framework. Performance indicators will be having a risk matrix implemented. The target date is 31st March 2015 on the day-to-day activities. The second bullet is the activation of preventative measures to curb and minimize corruption. Here, if a percentage of cases is finalized within the stipulated time frame, and the target is 90% disciplinary cases finalized within 60 days. This is a new action, and the cost for the new financial year will put it at 106,000. And second bullet on performance indicator is centralization of the application verification section. These are applications access points at Central Farm Register. This will be done and completed by the 30th October 2014. It's a new action also. And the third bullet on performance indicator is the percentage initiation of vetting processes for identified critical persons. This would like to have 100% of those members vetted. Still on performance management, action step is to address administration performance problems regarding all findings within the Central Firearm Register. Maybe the number of the performance indicator will be the number of repeat audit findings from external and internal assurance providers. Our
target is zero appetite issues. We are not looking at having any repeat finding audits. These financial costs are all on day to day. Section staff, the conducting of compliance inspections at station identified as having shortcomings. The performance indicator is the percentage of compliance inspections on firearm applications conducted at sampled problematic stations. The target is 100%. Here we have been 300,000 as funds that will be used. Under performance indicator, we still have another bullet, which is a number of compliance monitoring visits had identified problematic SAPS station stores. Here, it will depend on the number of problems that the combined assurance provides to us.
If I may just add to that, what we've adopted in SAP is a combined assurance approach, because we're saying we have the auditor general who comes and samples what they need to audit. They would normally have anything like a 30 to 35 stations that they audit. But to ensure that we, as a philosophy, we are saying no station should be unvisited or assured during the year. So we use a combination of our internal audit, our inspectorate, and what we call factory walkabout. So we, the internal audit would deal with a particular number in terms of the audit plan. Normally it's anything between 260, 300. Our inspectorate will take about anything around 500. The remainder is taken by the SMS. We have a factory visit questionnaire to say each one of us would be allocated a station that we visit. And we take that factory visit questionnaire and visit and make sure that all that bring what we call a combined assurance. So in totality, we make sure that there is no station that does not have an assured visit, whether it is from the AG or from the internal audit or from our, you know, inspectorate or from our SMS factory visit program. So what we are saying is that in that questionnaire, we're going to ask a parent to give us a list of questions, four or five critical questions that they are taken into all those platforms, so that we add on to what they're already doing in terms of the problematic statements, but we're saying ordinarily each of the stations would have a check of some sort through those processes that we undertake as part of our quality assurance. Thank you.
Thanks, Chapter Sinan. Action Staff reports on the performance of CFR in achieving the Firearms Act outcomes, and they indicate the appropriate data available for performance monitoring, and the target is annually and on the day-to-day. Here we're talking about a report that will be coming in, but internally we'll be receiving those reports quarterly, and then they will be also be going out annually, that is on the annual report of the SAPM. Second point is implement quarterly performance and budget review reports. Performance indicator is approved quarterly reports submitted on time. Target monthly reports approved by the Deputy National Commissioner of Policy and submitted to strategic management. Financial costs is on day to day. The third bullet is external stakeholder engagement to enhance operational processes. Performance indicator is number of meetings attended with external stakeholders and other government departments. Target is 12 meetings attended annually. The financial cost would be 91,200 of the previous year, and in this financial year is 108,000. The fourth bullet is human capital management. There is to achieve Central Farm Register effectiveness by building capacity and capability that will transform the Central Farm Register into a high-performing business unit. The action step is to ensure that the Central Farm Register is adequately resourced and skilled to deliver on its mandate. Performance indicator is average time taken to fill vacant posts funded. The
targeted within 3 months after becoming vacant. Financial cost, this is on a day-to-day. The second bullet on performance indicator is the percentage of competency of targeted employees trained and developed in line with the approved workplace skills plan. That should, the target should be 98% competent, and the finances for 2014 is 1.3 million. Bullet number two is to increase the designated firearms officer capacity by training public service tax members to conduct administrative functions in the DFO environment. The performance indicator is the number of PSA members trained to address administrative capacity challenges of the DFOs. Target is 2 per qualification. It's a new action for the new financial year. It will cost us 4.5 million. Still continuing on human capital management, the action step is to review and implement the current evidence management learning program. And the performance indicator is a percentage of competency of members trained in the revised program. Target is 98% competency, as the National Commissioner has just showed us that the yellow, it means that the money still has to be sought. It's not budgeted for. The next bullet should be to review the fixed establishment of the Central Fund Register. Performance indicator is comprehensive feasibility study finalized 31st October 2014. It's a new action on day-to-day budget. Moving over to facility infrastructure, here is to create a safe and secure working environment. The action service will improve the suitability of the Central Firearms Register building, which is very tough. Performance indicator, the number of SHE, that is safety, health and employment reports, submitted for actions when necessary. 4 reports to be submitted annually on a day-to-day. The next bullet is enhanced accessibility through establishment of targeted service delivery points. Performance indicator, number of operational mobile units. Target increased to 2 by 31st March 2015. Financial year 2014 was 650,000, and the other 650,000, it has not been budgeted for, students will be sourced somewhere. The third bullet is records filed and indexed correctly in containers. Performance indicator, the percentage of records filed and indexed. Target, 100% access and retrieval of records within the required time. This also falls into the day-to-day activity. The last bullet is information technology. Here is the support the business with required technology infrastructure based on service level agreements. Action steps, expansion and replacement of IT equipment at the CFR. Performance indicator, it will be an expanded IT equipment at the CFR. The target is 31st March 2015 at a financial cost of 859,000. Bullet number 2, categorize data in terms of ratio. Performance indicator, systems considered for categorization of data. Target implementation of report categorizing the data. It will be financed at 767,000. Action step would be to improve SLS content for notification to the applicant. Performance indicator, improved SMS system notification. Target implementation of improved content of SMS notification to upon application status. This will be costed at 512,000. Communication, that's a new bullet. Here it's to develop and intensify the communication strategy through the CCC approach, that is command, control, communication, command and control, and coordination. Action step is enhanced communication with the target public on safety issues relating to firearms and legislative requirements. Performance indicator, issuance of media statements and celebration of other platforms target, one, the province, financial costs in today-to-day activities. A second word on performance indicator, it will be the number of outreach programs conducted. Target is one outreach program in three provinces that will be financed at 150,000. The third bullet on performance indicator is the number of marketing and advertising initiatives. Target is the print and digital media, which will cost an amount of 1.8 million. That should be the end. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member.
Thank you for the management for that presentation. We will open up for questions. The first question from my side. At the previous hearing, we raised the matter of leadership. There was an indication, if I'm correct, the Secretariat must have, there was an indication from the management that 1 September the post will be filled of the unit. I just want to know if the baby is still acting at this stage. And then also the temporary task teams that have been indicated in the previous hearing, are they continuing with the work? Is there an end date for those task teams in terms of assisting going forward? I think one of the other issues we've raised at the previous hearing was also with regard to the disciplinary criminal steps with relation to the previous management, and then we requested an update. So if we can also be just input on the progress on that. Honourable Malawati.
Yeah, thank you. On slide number 11, about the categorized data in terms of ratio. So speaking, I'm asking myself, how will this categorization happen, seeing that we're talking of two database systems? Will this database be categorized separately, or what will happen? Thank you.
Other members? Honorable Market.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just checking slide number 10, the last bullet point, records files and indexed correctly in containers. And I was thinking we did an oversight at the Philippine police station, and the person who was responsible for records filing, she was the only person doing that job, and when we tried to find out, she said when she goes on leave, she will have to come back and find the records still there waiting for her to start from scratch. So I should think it must be stated in terms of human resource, or how many people need to do essential services like those ones. I don't think it's acceptable that when a person goes on leave, and I can imagine if it's an extensive leave, she won't be around for such a very long time. That needs to be looked into. And that brings me back to a question maybe I should have asked earlier on. Is there any allowance for people who go to leave, or is there some sort of, what will I say, some method that is used of members of the police going on leave? What I'm trying to say is that if, say, maybe you say only 2% can go on leave at one point, or can you have half of your members going on leave, and what is the criteria within maybe specific police station? And the last point would be on slide number 11, categorize data in terms of ratio. I don't understand what it means. Thank you.
Honorable Mbele. Just a quick question of Chairship of Lee. I might have missed the explanation, but under the action step of improving the feasibility of the CFR building Veritas, that's under the facility infrastructure section, can I just get an explanation of what that SHE acronym stands for, those four reports that are with the projects? Thank you.
Right, this time goes.
Thank you, Chair. Let's start with the questions that you raised around the leadership roles that need to be filled and that the issue of the task team, which I'll ask you to look into, and I'll start on the disciplinary issue. Indeed, the absence of a leader of this environment has actually created an imbalance, but we are grateful that the current review is acting in that area. We haven't been able to fill that post because there is an appeal on the receipt of the ex leader. So in terms of the labor relations, we cannot advertise and fill that post until that matter is closed. We're hoping that that shall be speedily handled and that we can move forward to bring stability in terms of leadership in that space. The disciplinary issue, it was a number of cases we've just submitted a written, we made a written submission as we had requested, detailing everything to say who is in discipline, where is it, how far are we in terms of those which ones have been completed, and giving also detailed explanation around this. That response has been submitted to yourself, Chairperson. There is the issue of, I just wanted to also refer to slide 9. Mention that one of the things that we're looking at, that second bullet, to the view of the seat establishment, some of the issues on the book that you are raising around whether the sufficiency of staff, we're looking at that, and I'm hoping that by the end of October, together with the OG environment, we'll be able to do a comprehensive feasibility analysis of our current staff deployment in that place to ensure that through staff establishment we've catered for some of those gaps that you've identified. That's part of the feedback that we shall give on that one to say we've done, and this is where we're sitting, and this is how we're planning to give treatment to those issues. The task team, let me ask General Luke to deal with it.
Thanks, National Commissioner. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the task team was formed when the head of CFR was suspended, because the head of CFR was the one who was attending to all the import and export payments, so the task team is the one that is presently doing that in the absence of the head.
And there are issues relating to slide 11. I'm using a different booklet, I'm sorry. There are issues that referred to slide 11, and I think it was also mentioned by Honorable Marquet to say big English, very, very big English. The categorization, namely by the active from the point of saying you deal with both cities in there. General Lady, are you around to talk about the technical and system issues, about the data categorization and ratio issues? If you are there, may I ask you to, I'll ask General Luke to open it and then General Casey to follow on it. Are you there, General Casey?
Okay. Thank you, General, I'm here. General, thank you. Thank you, Jefferson. Honourable members, there are two questions asked in this regard. A question from Honourable Mulvati, as well as a question from Honourable Mage on the categorization of data. When we appeared in the previous time, one of the questions that was posed was whether we are going to be maintaining a hybrid system or two separate systems, or are we going to fuse them into one. In that regard, a follow-up question was asked how will you be able to generate the data in terms of correct strength or the types of firearms that are in circulation? The categorization of data therefore talks to that part of that question. It means within the existing ERFS system, we are going to be updating such that you are able to give the number of firearms in circulation in relation to the businesses, in relation to the individuals, as well as associate those with the type of kind of activities that will be recorded during those kinds of processes. So within the database or the expanded ERFS system, we will then be able to determine at any point in time what type of firearms are in circulation against which category for individuals or for businesses. So that actually talks to that improvement while the other investigation is continuing at the CSIR. Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps on the same note, there was a question on the SHE issues that the Honourable Bele inquired on the acronym of SHE, SHE, Safety, Health and Environmental Management Factors. Amongst the requirements within the Veritas building is the inclusion of safe or strong rooms. The application or legislative framework on the type of strong rooms that may then be accommodated within buildings, which may then be able to be acquired or taken up by the building in which they are contained. So amongst other things that are done from facility point of view is to assess the suitability then of the environment, if it can be able to accommodate a strong room so that it is within compliance. This is among other things that will be done in that aspect. It's the health and environmental aspects associated in the building. Thank you.
Then there were issues, Chair, that were asked around the competing with dealt with the staffing side of things, which will be dealt with as part of the establishment review for this environment. But I also want to flag another important issue. You would recall that there was a moratorium on the destruction of documents and records. It was lifted in terms of the other departments, but the criminal, the justice, JCPS cluster was not given that permission. So we are still dealing with not a lot of records, and we're totally inundated in terms of space, and we're hoping that the executive, the parliament at some point will come to our rescue and give a guideline as to what we can destroy, what we can destroy, so that we start creating space. We are starting to also pick up some body findings, because it becomes very difficult to set records with such clusters and non-destroying environment. So I just wanted to raise that to say the moratorium is also having an impact in terms of our record keeping. The issue of allowance for leave, I don't think we have an allowance for people going on leave, but when somebody is on leave, we must make sure that those that are remaining are able to do the job, and it falls in on the market with all those issues to start saying, if we have one person, how do we deal with those type of issues? We'll be able to, through our establishment assessment, to doctor those type of limitations. Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Honorable Kamal Khan, Honorable Ada Barnard.
Mike Songer, please. Physical policing has got a lot to do with the relationship between the police and the community. There is an act. I'm going to quote it because it specifically mentions that the police must record whatever is being brought to them by the members of the community. It is Act 12 of 2004, which the title is Prevention of Fraud and Corrupt Activity. In particular, Section 84 thereof. It has got to do also with a platform relationship that has got to do with prevention of crime, especially also prevention of the protests and so on, because the information would have been received before this happened. I had practical experience of it. In fact, last week I went to, I noticed that there was some corrupt activities. I went to the police station in Littleton, Centurion, in Victoria, and I reported what I have observed. And the police who was supposed to have helped me, they I do not know about that. And secondly, if I have to do something about what you have observed, you must be having either a conscience of some sort. But the act says suspicious activity must be recorded, and the police must record that. I'm not sure whether the people are being trained for this, because this is very important where people get information for the protest or crime. They need to get this information, and they get this information from the members of the public who have suspicious suspicious of observation. And secondly, some of these acts which can help the police do not have, in particular this one, do not have regulation. Regulation can guide the members of the public as to what do they need to take to the police so that whatever suspicion they have can be recorded. Can that be looked into, especially this act is very important to have that information before the horrendous acts happen. Thank you.
Honourable Member, it's over with you. I'm Honourable Caravana, and I guess I just want to give you the invitation. We're going to try and finish this in the next 5 minutes. Then we're going to have lunch. The judge has arrived, so we can deal with that as well. So just ask members to stay about until 2:15. The house, I think, is starting at 3. So members, thank you for your kind assistance. And you must also get a briefing on strat plan. On Thursday, Friday.
Yes, when the relevant members of SAT came before us last time, there was, and I've looked carefully at my notes, it does seem a bit unclear. Could I have a definitive answer? We were told there's a difference between one applying for and one receiving a license, etc. I had asked if there was a backlog. Now, we were sure there was no backlog, but then there was a little bit of backtracking. I did think there was some confusion. So I want to know if there is a backlog of those who have applied for a license renewal and what it is, if there is a backlog still. If there is a backlog who applied previously for a firearm license, even though the claim is that current applications go through within 90 days. So let's just clarify that once and for all. So any backlog of license applied for previously, any backlog of renewals applied for previously before this new dispensation and the new crew took over. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from members? I'll leave to the National Commission.
Jefferson, thank you. The issues that are raised by Honourable Chibong, we will take note of. I guess it's comments and advising us to take note of this specific matter. But also just to say, when such issues are reported, it then becomes important for us, Honourable Chibong, that the person who has observed will also help us to make an A1 statement so that if we are to take things forward, we'll be able to deal with it. But we will take that. Go through this piece of act and look at how we can again enrich our interventions as for this. And we also note the issue raised about regulations. We will seek to look into some of those things. But maybe just to say, we have a policy committee. I will refer this matter to them so that they further explore this advice that has been
members. See, as far as backlog is concerned, we don't have any backlog on licenses. Maybe what might happen is licenses have been issued but are sitting at stations. Either the applicant has moved, can be located, hence we're talking about the issue of intensifying on the SMS matter. That again, the license is finalized. The applicant is SMS that your so license has been issued, you can collect it at this station. But in as far as backlog is concerned, we are not having any backlog whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We come to the end of this presentation. We want to thank the Central Fire Registry for the action plan. But what we will also do in this case, we'll also visit the facility in the third week of September to see if this action plan is in line with what's currently happening in practice. So we'll also go to Victoria to deal with that. So thank you very much for the presentation. It's critical that we get the leadership right and that institution is very vital, and I think also the review of the organizational structure is critical. Maybe the appropriate level and oversight, that's critical. Of course, at the last meeting, we also indicate the question of vetting is vital. So we must ensure that the vetting is done timely and effectively, especially with all persons involved in the issuing of licenses and overseeing that. Of course, the issue of tax person schools is critical. Now, visiting a young guy was quite good. We were quite impressed how there was nothing wrong. So you can say, well done to the station commander there. But that's the picture we want to see across the country. And we'll also be visiting police stations in the next few weeks, and we'll also check on that. You know, what is the state of readiness, and is there a good management in regard to that. So that's going to be critical. As we previously indicated, firearms play a huge role in violent crime in the country. And SAPS must ensure that the Central Iron Bombs Registry is run in a transparent and professional way. There should be any loopholes. There shouldn't be any opportunity for members to transgress the law. And we will support any steps from the police management to ensure that these transgressions, serious steps are taken against those members. And you must replace our provincial management of those of the Central Fire Registry. You must do it. We need strong interventions. We must send the signal to our citizens that firearms are dangerous mechanisms that can create havoc, and we must ensure that there's strict control over that. So we will support you in that way. Thank you very much to the National Commission and team for the action this morning, and we also look forward to other interactions in the next few weeks. Members, we will now go for a 15-minute lunch break, and then we will get the judge from the DPCI here for further interactions. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm sorry, yes, yes. What are you talking about?
Mr. The judge for the DPCI.
Yeah, what
complaints
are you talking about? Complaints received. Oh, okay, cool. That's interesting.
Well, you won't give the fellow the complaint, just some
how many of
how many the other things are. Can
Thank you.